Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, damas y caballeros,
welcome back to another edition of Leave the Ring Radio. I'm your host, Dave Duenas, with my co-host, Mr. Gabriel Montoya. And we didn't have a show last week, so we have a lot of catching up here on Leave the Ring Radio. Got a lot of things to talk about in the boxing world. You know, if you had your pick right, the way I had it last week, you know, we have our moments where we can get our pick right. And I had picked Mile High Alvarado to win by unanimous decision. Like I said that he was going to have to be the captain of his boat going through the perfect storm, which would be Brandon Rios. And that's exactly what he ended up doing. He was able to, you know, early on, let me take this back. Early on, it looked like it was going to be a repeat of what was happening because, you know, Brandon, as usual, came out strong, was putting the pressure. He did exactly what he's known for. He's a guy that knows how to come forward, you know, pair some shots, and then starts to land his big shots. But Mike Alvarado did some subtle things in there that I think that turned the fight around for himself, took out the steam of Brandon Rios, and that was go to that body and do a little bit more moving in boxing. The jab obviously was a big player in that part of the game plan, but there was a couple of other things, which was, you know, he kept switching his stance, which I thought that was, and early on, you're thinking, okay, maybe he's a bit confused. He's trying to figure out something he could use that's going to kind of get Brandon Rios off of his trail. But then more and more what I saw what he was doing is that he understood it was working for him. It was making Brandon think rather than move forward and be a mauler. And when he did that, when he made Brandon start to think, he was able to land some combinations. Because there were some times and some moments in that fight you can watch. If you go back and watch that fight, you can see that Brandon Rios didn't throw a punch after a few flurries of Mike Alvarado. And it all was down to he didn't know. He almost got like stuck on the moment because he didn't know what he needed to do. So that was a key thing for him, for Mike Alvarado to do.
Let me jump on in there. Sorry, Dave. I threw some texts at you.
I know.
Well, first off, you know, welcome back, dude. After a week off, some great boxing. I know we got to catch up. Kind of juggling the guests. Let me just get an update. Where we were hoping to have Lamont Peterson tonight. There's nothing wrong with Lamont, but our contact. There's an issue, and he's okay. We're not going to have Lamont, I don't think, tonight. We'll see. It's going to be another one of those shows, Dave, where we just kind of ride it. But I am very excited about the guests we do have. I know we're going to have Julio Diaz later on in the show. I'm going to try to get Abel Sanchez on the line. Justin Fortune joins us at 7 o'clock to tell us about winning the WBU heavyweight title last week with Jeremy Williams, who came back after 6 weeks. Dude, you got to hear this story. I won't even spoil it with any sort of teasers. It's just... you just got to hear this story. But joining us at 5:15 is Dr. Don Catlin, who is one of the co-creators of carbon isotope ratio testing, CIR, as we talk about, the thing that is designed to detect exogenous or synthetic testosterone, basically testosterone that doesn't come from your body but was injected, ingested, rolled on, sucked on like a lozenge, dropped in your eyeballs or underneath your tongue, put on a patch underneath your balls, or all the many different ways that you can take synthetic testosterone. This test will catch it. So he'll be on. He used to run the UCLA Olympic testing lab. So this is a guy that he's not Memo Heredia. He's not Victor Conte. He's a guy that dedicated his career to catching guys like that when they were in their primes. So it's going to be interesting to talk to him.
He's the guy that was policing all these dudes, you know, trying to find the evidence that wasn't there. So he decided to make something that kid. Bring it to surface.
And we're going to have a wide window, I think, Dave. If I'm correct, we'll have like 5:15. Well, really just kind of open-ended to have Dr. Catlin on. I don't know how long he wants to go, but anti-doping guys usually want to talk a while. So, I mean, he could talk about Lance Armstrong. It could be one of those really educational interviews. So I'm looking forward to that. But Rios Alvarado, dude, I was listening to what you were saying. I had a clear – I don't know how you scored it. I had an 8-4, maybe 7-5, but definitely Mike Alvarado. I didn't feel like Brandon Rios won the fight. I thought he ran out of ideas kind of midway through. And I thought when he got hurt early on, it was like, what, second, third round? It's been a minute since I've seen it now. He started getting buzzed, and you could actually see him. Like, it wasn't body punches so much. I mean, although the body punches of Alvarado was nice. He really placed his shots. It was very economical. He wasn't afraid to move and be not stinky, but just absolutely get out of an area, move all the way to some other area, and let Rios come to him and like walk in his shots. He dared to be boring in spots, and yet the fight wasn't. I mean, it was just – I thought that the little adjustment to keep getting space was the difference for him, and that stiff jab. Brandon had it early, but he didn't have it late. And I don't know. You kind of wonder how many more fights Rios can fight that kind of put up my shield – which includes my face, and take shots to land my shots. He looked explosive early on. I you know, we talk about Memo Heredia and all that, but, you know, reading like Francisco Salazar's report and talking about how, you know, Memo had him doing these, or Angel, I'm not sure how he prefers to be called, but, you know, Heredia had him doing sprints. And you could see the explosiveness early on of Rios. When he landed that jab, it was like he exploded off the back foot and almost, you know, knocked Alvarado down with that. That's a direct result of that kind of sprint training. Remy Korchemny does the same thing with a nice stable of fighters like Amir Khan, Fernando Guerrero, Demetrius Andrade, and Andre Berto, I think, is up there now, Marlon Esparza. And they do the same kind of thing. It's like that explosiveness training, and Nonito Donaire. So you could see that in evidence. And I wondered, coming out of it, if they go into that third fight, it was such a war of attrition, but that Alvarado kept getting hurt. When he got hurt, he got really hurt. Like, Rios got wobbled, and then he would come forward, and it should be dangerous. When Alvarado gets hurt, he has to retreat and regroup, and that might be the difference in the third fight. If the sprint training and all the work with Heredia, and maybe the right fight in between for Brandon Rios, he might get Mike in the third fight. I would almost pick him, like in 8 rounds, to be like explosive the way Marquez was after, you know, spending time with Heredia. Because it's clear that like explosiveness is like to build that power.
Explosiveness too, but
is his like MO, you know.
But at the same time, he's got to have. Look, the way I looked at it was they went in with the same game plan they went in with the first fight, which was apply a lot of pressure, be in Alvarado's face, take his best shots, and weigh him down. They didn't expect the Mike Alvarado to touch the body and give angles. And that's where the confusion came from. And it turned out to be in those later rounds, Brandon Rios was more looking for Alvarado while Alvarado was finding him at pockets. Brandon's got to go back. And what they got to configure now is that his style is very easy to figure out. You gotta add a few here and there. I mean, not change the kid completely, but you gotta add a few things here and there. You got that his camp and himself gotta understand that now from here on out, guys are gonna get on their bicycle a little bit more. They're gonna use their jab. They're gonna pick and choose when they decide to trade. And if their legs are well conditioned and they've conditioned themselves correctly to go the long distance with Brandon Rios, then they're probably on their way of always getting a victory. But that's where Brandon's team and himself, they now have to go back and add more to the homework assignments while they're in the gym so that they can throw out a few little tricks for you know, from themselves so they can make sure they break anybody's rhythm of trying to do what just happened to him the second Saturday of past. So that's what they got to do. I'm not going to write off Brandon Rios. I kind of agree with you. This, if it goes on to a third fight, there's a strong possibility he'll take it. But at the same time, like I said, there's things to be learned out of this first fight. And I think he's young enough to learn them. I think he's also got to learn, too, that taking out that much punishment. You know, I know being macho in the ring, that's where you gain your fans from. But now you got to show some intelligence with that macho-ness. And always, fight fans, you want to call in? You certainly can. 347-215-7598. Don't forget to download the app. If you want to listen to the show live, you can definitely download the Leaving the Ring 2.0. It's the new one. If you have the old one on your Android, well, you're going to have to uninstall it and then put up the new one. Now, when you have that new app, I just got to throw out there really quick. You could swipe side to side, and you could see the other features. Because if I had some folks hit me up, they're like, "Hey, I don't have the archives anymore, or I don't have I can't see the videos, and what happened to this?" Everything's on there, everything and more. Now there's a fan wall. You can leave your comment on there. You can leave us a voicemail if you want. Anything. I mean, it's a really interactive application. So go ahead and go out there and download it. Leaving the Rings mobile app, the very first out there. And interact with it and have a good time with it. So let's pass in some fight fans. We're going to throw in first up is going to be our boy CT, who always calls in all the time. What's up, brother? You're on live right now on Leaving the Ring.
Hey, what's up, guys? How are you doing today?
Doing great, brother.
Doing great, man. Never better.
Yeah, you guys excited about this weekend's fight?
Man, am I. I'm really, you know, dude, you know what, man? The more and I know some fight fans were disappointed about the whole Morris and Dornier, which to me would have been the logical choice of going ahead after for Dornier. And that's obviously the choice that Modest and his team wanted, but they had to move on. But the Rigondeaux is not a disappointment. I know he only has 11 fights. I know he was a superstar and amateur, and that's a completely different outlook when you turn pro. But, dude, if you're a real hardcore fight fan, you got to sit back and go, these two guys, their matchup style is just destined to not go the distance. There's going to be a knockout. There's going to be somebody's going to get dropped early in the rounds, which I think is going to be Rigondeaux. I think he's going to get dropped like within the first, second round. But then this is the thing that Dornier, I always have thought that he kind of screws up. He gets overzealous. He gets a bit excited. And he tries to go for the kill. He squares up and he leaves himself open. He doesn't set up punches. He just throws off a memory. And that's where Rigondeaux is going to capitalize. And I was telling this, I think I was telling Gabriel, telling you this the other night, right, Gabriel? I was saying, you're going to see the replica of Pacquiao and Marquez, the final fight, which Pacquiao was doing the most damage. He had Marquez retrieving. Then all of a sudden, boom, it was over. And it was because Pacquiao was being too aggressive. And that's exactly what I see with Nonito Dornier. He's going to get over-aggressive. He's going to overcommit. And you don't do that with a counterpuncher. You just don't do it.
Go ahead. I was going to say, it's hard. It's really hard for me to break this fight down because we have two counterpunchers that can counterpunch in like a split second, and they both like to set traps, so it's very hard to say who's going to win. You can also go off like, you know, Dornier being the more athletic fighter, punching a little bit more wider, but Rigondeaux being the better boxer and throwing punches straight down the middle. It's very hard to – I see, you know, Rigondeaux, he fights with a little bit of arrogance to him that I've been seeing, you know, and I think that's going to get – That's going to be a downfall in this fight because Dornier is the type of fighter where he can punch you on the run. Like, he's very unorthodox in his own way, you know what I mean? I think he's going to catch Rigondeaux coming in with one of those left hooks. But then again, I can see Rigondeaux knocking Dornier down, too. It's very hard for me to pick a winner. I'm leaning towards Dornier, but I don't really know. I don't know. I'm
going to
enjoy the fight.
I think it's going to be more exciting. People think it's going to be. Rigo is on a seek and destroy mission. He feels a little disrespected. He feels like no one really understands his greatness. And this is his way to show the world how great he really is. Is he going to be able to do that? I don't know. But he's certainly going to go down trying. I don't expect to see him in a. I'd be surprised if it goes 12 and he's not trying to win. At the final bell, I really would. He understands that this isn't a Mexican dude that's gonna be more rugged with him. Maybe hurt him, scare him, and it's like a, you know, win this one, look good in the next one. He understands that there may not be another one on this level if he doesn't win. I like your points, Dave. You know, I think the body of Dornier. I got to be honest. I was there for his final sparring session. I wasn't crazy about the middle. The midsection looked soft to me. I saw like a roll of fat there, and I'm not crazy about it. He didn't look sluggish or slow. I didn't feel like he always got hit when he didn't want to, but there were times when he got hit when I know he didn't want to. And you know, it wasn't like he was test like Pacquiao, you know, when he wants to get hit. But Donaire looked good. His speed looked good, but I see a lot of flaws. And while Rigo doesn't have a lot of bells and whistles, a lot of multi-punch combinations, what he does throw is very precise. And Freddie Roach, you know, even after Rigo left him, and they had a little bit of thing in the media, Freddie Roach told both me and Steve Kim how hard the guy hits. But he told me particularly, like, early on that there was only one other guy he felt comfortable with, and that was or felt this kind of chemistry with right off the bat on the mitts, and that was Manny Pacquiao. And he said, this guy hits ridiculously hard. He hits precisely. You know, he's not fast up-tempo in his offense, but when he does land, it's lights out, and he knows how to finish. He's a master of footwork and range, and I don't know if Donaire fully respects that. He's going to after this fight. I got Rigo late. I got him by a sudden, like maybe eighth, ninth round, sudden knockout to the body.
You know,
straight.
You know what I like that's
added. You got to call in Dr. Catlin, though. We're at 516, and I'm
okay.
Telling you, he gave me a little lip about last week. I gave you that number.
I will call him in right now. CT, I'm going to put you on hold, okay, brother? Don't hang up.
All right, thanks a lot.
Hey, thank you, CT.
Right, let me patch him in. But just to make my point while I'm about to patch him in right now, is what I like that's added to the Rigondeaux camp is obviously Pedro Diaz. You know, I think that's a major plus because the fact that Pedro Diaz understands him because he's been with him for so long. You know?
But I'll be... Are you calling?
I'm calling him right.
Sorry, I thought you were like, I apologize. I tried to space it out so you could see it. Is it all right? Let me, I guess, just go into this intro of Dr. Don Catlin. He, formerly of the UCLA Medical Lab, you may have seen him on 9.79. He gave his expert opinion on that.
Hello?
Hello, can we please speak to Mr. Dr. Catlin?
Speaking.
Hi, Dr. Catlin. This is Dave Duenas, and of course, my name is Gabriel Montoya. We're from Leave It in the Ring Radio. I'm also with MaxBoxing.com. Welcome to the show. Thank you for joining us here.
Well, thanks for having me.
I was awkwardly kind of giving you an introduction, but I think maybe you'd be more qualified to introduce yourself. Why don't you, if you could, just introduce the listeners to what you've done. I already said that you were the head of the UCLA Medical Lab, but if you could elaborate on that, and also one of the co-creators of carbon isotope ratio testing. I wouldn't call it controversial, but it's certainly a hot-button testing method in the sport today. So I'll leave the floor to you.
Well, I was walking along one day 30 years ago, minding my own business, and the IOC, International Olympic Committee, came to visit me. And because I had some background in chemistry and testing, and they asked me to develop a lab in the United States to do the testing for the 84 games. I took a look at what they needed. I'm an MD, not a PhD, and I really couldn't see how I could do it. There's so many drugs on the list, I didn't know what they all were. So I said no, and I talked to my boss, my chairman, and he agreed, but then the IOC came back and they said, well, by the way, you're going to get a lot of funding for this. Well, that's what makes chairman click. So we decided to take it on, and that changed my life right then and there because I've stayed with drugs and sport ever since. I went on to develop a lab which became the largest lab, sport testing lab in the world. We do testing for everybody under the sun, NFL, Major League Baseball, all the Olympic sports, and you name it. And that's what I've done for 30 years. And then I kind of stepped aside and let other people work for a while, but the boxing thing keeps coming up in my face time after time. And I finally decided it's an area where I can actually do some good. They really need help. Boxing is in abysmal shape. And so I've been working and getting to know people in boxing and trying to see if we can find a serious way they can get on to testing.
Now, you're part of one of the team that developed carbon isotope ratio testing. Can you talk about that? Because I'll lead into other things, but I fully agree with you in that you know, boxing seems to be the Wild West. It's an untamed frontier in terms of the drug world. Just being, you know, unregulated or regulated state by state, each state kind of leaves a lot of loopholes, and there's regions that aren't even being tested, to say the least, right? But can we talk a little bit about carbon isotope ratio testing, just to lay a foundation here first?
Yeah, it's a test which I actually developed 15 years ago. It took me a long time to get it through because I didn't have any funding or any money. So I kind of had to do it as a side project. And I was working with a guy in France who had the instrument. And gradually, over 5 or 10 years, we were able to get enough data, so I looked at it and I said, this thing works. And at that time, and still today, a major problem in testing is the TE ratio. That's the only way you can tell whether a boxer or anybody has used testosterone. And if you submit a sample to carbon isotope ratio, you can tell whether or not they used store-bought testosterone or whether their testosterone is natural. And the test was finally approved by the WADA 10 years ago. It's withstood the test of time. It's used every day all over the world. It's a great test, if I say so myself.
How much do you think CIR is being used in Olympic sport? I mean, like, what percentage of urine samples collected are being tested with it?
I would have to look up the percentage, but it's used. Every WADA lab, 35 of them around the world, probably 30 of them do the test. And if they don't do the test, their neighbor in the next country does it. UCLA does a lot because I developed the test. Unfortunately, it's still expensive, but it works. It's never been overthrown, and it's a perfect way to deal with a very, very complex problem because testosterone is a favorite drug for people to use. Dopers who want to get away with it because it's so hard to detect. The TE ratio is a very blunt instrument.
I agree.
That's what they use. They still more or less use it in Nevada, I'm afraid, although recently I learned that, what's the guy's name over there?
Keith Kaiser?
Yeah. Apparently he sends some samples to UCLA. So they had the test once, maybe.
Hmm. Well, you kind of answered one of my questions, is that, you know, we've had the emergence of Victor Conte in the last few years, who was famous for Balco, but now it seems to be a leading voice for anti-doping. He's very vocal, certainly. But then you also have Memo Heredia. What's that?
Yes and no. I know.
Well, in boxing. Yeah, so I'm curious what your thoughts about him, and also like the emergence of a Memo Heredia on the scene, who, you know, in 2009 said that, you know, peak performance at the top level is without doping is a fairy tale, my friend. What are your thoughts about those guys in the sport? One, they're kind of giving two different messages, or I don't know. I'm conflicted, so I'm curious what you think.
I know them very well. It was me that did all the work for the Balco case. So, of course, doing the work for Balco means you get to know those guys very well, what they were doing and how they were doing it. It's hard for me to generate a lot of enthusiasm for what they did because I had to deal with the fallout. And there was a lot of fallout. A lot of people were injured, and sport was hurt pretty badly by them. But they're gone. It's 10 years, and it's a new page, and I can see that, what's his name, the main guy, well, not already, the other one, Conte.
Mm-hmm.
Is, you know, he's trying to help. I just have a problem because of my own history in accepting his help, but it's not for me. He can help boxing. And I also take, I disagree with some of his recommendations. But that's neither here nor there in one sense. He's trying to say that he knows it all because he was once the leading doping person, and now that he's no longer doing that and he's reformed, that he can help people. And to some extent that's true. I don't have any day-to-day dealings with him, so I really don't know what he's doing, but I have read some of the things that he's suggested, and some of them I agree with and some of them I don't agree with at all. He agrees with the carbon isotope ratio.
Yeah, he's a big advocate.
Right, and that's, so he's okay from that point of view.
Well, like, I'm curious what you think about. Well, I'm curious what you would disagree with him on, but I don't want to do an interview about Conte. I'm curious more that because we're so unregulated, do you think with the presence of guys like this, and I'm all for second chances, but I'm also for not taking any chances. Do you think that we should get everybody under like a mandatory system? Is that or is it just enough to get it up to par to fix boxing? Just get everybody doing the same things. What should we fix? So some people say biopassport. I don't agree with that. I think it's running before you even crawl. What are your thoughts?
I agree with you. It's hard to push on passport at this point. You got to be able to walk first,
mm-hmm.
and then you can run. Passports are very complex, very difficult, but it's a wonderful tool when boxing gets there. But I don't think they're there. I mean, right now, They're nowhere. You know, you have a different set of rules and regulations in every state that does boxing, and they don't agree. The penalties are not systematic. In one country, you get a slap on the wrist. In another country, you get kicked out for 6 months. It's just shameful the way it goes on, and that's going to continue, I'm afraid, until somebody with some real clout organizes and puts some sense into it. It's too bad. Boxing is a wonderful, wonderful sport, but it's just going downhill with each and every bout.
You had said, too, earlier that, you know, testosterone, and I agree with you on this. Most people in anti-doping do, that testosterone's the drug. But there's some people that think, and Memo even said this in that interview, I'm sure you've seen the German documentary where he injects himself with EPO and he talks about the different drugs. Do you think that he said that he could design a whole new designer drug. Now, when somebody says that, are they talking about a designer regimen that can be undetected? Do you think designer drugs do exist, or are people just using the testosterone and that's a bit of a myth?
Now, there are lots of things you can do today without a new drug. All you have to do is read the book that Lance Armstrong's buddy wrote, and How to Dope and Get Away with It.
Yeah.
I forget his name, but you know what I mean.
You're talking about Hamilton?
Yes.
Okay,
he described infinite detail what they were doing, and it works. You just have to be smart. You have to know when to dope and when not to dope and how to cover it up. And they had all kinds of tricks, which anybody in any sport could do today. That's why it's kind of sad to see that sport really hasn't gotten on top of that, because all you have to do is read his book and you can be an athlete in any sport and get away with doping. And testosterone is the main drug they use.
You could just read the Armstrong report that USADA put out, which I thought was kind of irresponsible, and you could pretty much figure out their doping regimen and get a reasonable facsimile of how to use it. Let me ask you this. If CIR was approved all that long ago, one, why wasn't it used? And in your opinion, if they had implemented it as kind of a mandatory screener the way, say, VADA does, that it's, they always use it as policy, does Lance Armstrong win a single Tour de France?
Wait a minute. You know, if they used the test back then, when did he start? 2002?
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
Believe so.
I'm not sure exactly what he was doing in those days, but I'm sure he and Hamilton had ways And I'm not sure. Carbon isotope ratio was available. There were a lot of politics which held back the test. You know, it took me 15 years to get it through and approved. And
why is that? Is that just scientists' jealousy? Is that people testing the science and wanting a longer period to look at it? What is that?
It's all of the above. It's basically people get jealous. They don't want to agree with somebody because they didn't do it. And somebody else will get the credit, so they want to block them from getting credit so they don't go along with it. And then you have WADA, which is very difficult to work with, and they don't like to grant credit to anybody. And it's a mess. But once it's done, it's done. And now it is done, and it's useful not only for detecting testosterone, but for detecting many endogenous steroids. It ought to be used on every boxer. I mean, after all, boxing is very simple. You only have very few people who actually compete. And for any bout, there's only two people.
And right.
If you can easily get around and do the testing for them.
That's what I don't get. They say it's so expensive. It's too expensive. That's what, like CIR, Keith Kaiser always says that it's too expensive. And yet, one, testosterone clinics are a burgeoning industry within Las Vegas where a lot of fighters train. And within the industry, period, it doesn't make a lot of sense to not do it. But also, you know, all the amateurs are testing entire teams of people and occasionally mixing in CIR. And yet complaining they don't have enough funding to get the USA female boxers or male boxers to do international competition. It doesn't really make sense. I mean, do they really want to catch people? Or do you think the commissions just want to look like they're catching people?
No, they don't want to catch people, let's face it. And they don't. They say they don't have the money, and I'm sure they don't have a lot. But, you know, people have ways of getting by with minimal resources.
Right.
And if they really had a will to do something, they could get it done. And people would help. I would be happy to help. You know, what's her name? Dr. Goodman is more than willing to help.
Yeah.
She never gets she didn't get a chance because USADA jumps in and takes control.
Do you think there's a little bit of a she's got a bit of a history with the commission and she and Flip left and you know I'm not really sure what the deal is. I know that when I started doing interviews with Kaiser, he seemed to put my relationship with Dr. Goodman, because I'd interviewed her before, on me as some sort of way that I was against him or I was a spy. I found that very paranoid. Do you think that on some level she's being frozen out a little bit by the industry?
I don't know. That's,
I mean, it's maybe a tough question.
There's a lot of internal politics, and I just don't understand them. I'm not that close enough
sure.
to boxing to really understand what's going on to an nitty-gritty level. I see the outcome.
Sure.
The outcome is when Margaret Goodman has had a chance to do the testing, her first two people that she worked with were positive. That was pretty amazing. And she did the testing right. She hit a home run with the first carbon isotope ratio that she did.
Yeah, she hit it right out of the park.
Right.
It was the whole point that it was there.
Because I'm advising her.
Well, there you go.
I'm a little curious of what are some of the things that you don't agree with Victor Conte.
I am too.
Oh, I'd have to go back over some of the stuff he said. I have it all and I save it, but it's something I read very often. It's just that, you know, I read his material and I don't expect him to have the scope and the level of knowledge that I have. You know, after all, I got umpty-ump degrees and I've been working in the field for 30 years of my life. So when he says something that I don't agree with, I could look it up and call you back or tell you about it at another time.
We'll prep you for the next interview then, yeah. That question's been sitting in my mind, like Dave, like the whole time. Can I ask you about the rule, the 50% hematocrit rule that cycling's adopted? Do you think boxing should do that, where it's if you're over 50% hematocrit, which is like a red blood cell count, then a temporary suspension for 14 days immediately goes into effect, and then they investigate you, check for EPO. Do you think we should use that?
Absolutely. It's very, very powerful. You know, boxers, your boxers should not go over 50%. Anybody for 50% is using EPO, and I think there's a lot of EPO being used in boxing. I know there is. But it's too expensive for them to test for it, and the hematocrit test is one. You can do that for $5. And you don't have to call the person positive, and therefore you just say you can't play until your hematocrit comes down below 50. So I'm not saying you're positive. I'm just saying that it's a danger to your health to compete in boxing if your hematocrit is more than 50%. And so that's why we're keeping you out. And then you don't get a lawsuit. You're not saying you're positive. You're just saying it's a health issue. Very clever.
And you think that's where maybe some of these random strokes where a fighter is fighting and maybe the hematocrit was raised and the guy didn't even know it? What would cause that? I mean, would it be strictly EPO use, or would it be...
It's all EPO.
You think EPO is rampant in boxing, or is possibly used in boxing?
I think it is from my intelligence sources, but until you get out there and actually test, you don't know. If they're smart, they are, because it's the world's most powerful drug for almost any sport. It's very, very effective.
Really? You would call it that? That's crazy.
Yep.
Why would you say that?
Testosterone lead the pack, but I would give EPO the edge.
Wow.
Why would you give EPO the edge?
It just works. It really works.
Like
that's
endurance.
What people care about.
I'm looking over all my questions. You've actually been answering questions without me asking. do you think, this is a bit of a provocative question, and I don't know if I'm saying this, I kind of already asked you this, but I'm not talking about USADA specifically, but kind of, particularly what happened with Garcia Morales too, but just kind of doping in general, do they really want to catch dopers, or is testing more of a deterrent, and are they aware of those positive results are they aware that like the positive results are bad for business, including television and the sponsorship that they get from that? I mean, do you think it's all a big business? And I've dedicated like 3 years of my life to anti-doping. You've dedicated your whole life to it. And I just wonder, is this a mountain that can be climbed?
It is a mountain that can be climbed. You can't just turn away from it because it'll kill you in the long run. It'll kill the sport. It'll kill people within the sport. Eventually, you got to deal with it. You can try as long as you can to get away with it, but it'll come back and bite you in the butt every time you leave it alone. You've got to cope with it. And there are ways to cope with it without spending a fortune, some very clever and simple things. But I don't think that boxing powers that be are all that interested. I mean, I wrote to Keyser a couple times and never even got an answer from him.
Yeah.
That shows you how much his interest in me was.
I want to know, let me ask you this, Doctor. Has anybody argued with you that this testing that you've started is not effective or it's not needed in sport?
In boxing or in any sport?
And in any sport.
Well, most people come down on the side of that by saying, yeah, we're going to have to keep going on it. Can't get away, can't stop it. I'm beginning, after 30 years in the business and trying to promote testing and waiting for the day when I had enough money to do some tests, that I developed some tests for Dianabol and other steroids, but now I'm seeing that... No matter where we go, there's a way to beat the test. And I am becoming more and more a fan of my own program, which is to have voluntary testing. I think that could work. I just think to try to chase people around all over the world year after year and pin them down, there's too many ways they can run away and hide. And so I'm becoming more and more enamored with the idea of taking a different approach. You got to keep going with some kind of testing.
Yeah.
But because if you don't, you just everybody will go all over the place on you.
I remember reading an interview with you in, I think it was 2010, somewhere maybe late 2009, where you talked about that, of the voluntary, the idea that the fighters may have to step up, or the athletes, and it was on doghouseboxing.com. And I think that's what we're seeing is kind of the fighters policing themselves. I don't know if that's a model that can survive, but I think it could get enough movement and momentum that the commissions will be forced to. I mean, the Boutte-Pascal fight is getting testing because both sides want it. I mean, Interbox really pushing for it. Jim saying, cool, we're going to do it. The commissions actually don't want to be involved. Now, when you do testing like that, and we saw this with Berto and Peterson, there was no penalty for them. Where do we go from there? I mean, some people are saying, well, anti-doping doesn't work. Do you think it's just now on us, the writers, or somebody to just start investigating the commissions and outing them rather than throwing out the baby with the bathwater?
You got to keep working every angle of it, and you can't give up. You got to keep going. I don't see much exploration going on, but I know that boxing isn't all that wealthy, and they can't afford to do much exploration, but they can use the monies they do have to do more efficient. But they've got to get some reasonable advice, and they have to follow it.
Right.
And I work with a number of people in boxing who could make a difference. And also there's some real prime movers in boxing, some of the big promoters that could well afford it, I should think.
How soon do you think before the investigator Jeff Nowitzki looks at boxing and says, there's a new horizon. There's somewhere where I can conquer and really go to work. I mean, it seems like there's a Balco around every corner, or at least some sort of ring in you know, with that Miami clinic. And I think if you investigated the TRT clinics, it would just be a bonanza. Do you think he would be interested?
He has to go where the money is. And the money is not in boxing. It's not that boxing doesn't have any money, but it's hardly an Olympic sport. It is, but it isn't. It is an Olympic sport, and Olympic boxing does require testing. That's Mayweather, but it's not a leading factor in boxing. And until it is, it's not going to be all that much attention won't be paid for it.
So in other words, boxing is left alone to clean its own backyard.
Yeah, I don't think Jeff can do it for you. I mean, he could certainly do more than anybody because he has tools.
Right.
The rest of us don't. He can investigate, and he can chase people down and put people on your back and on your tail. He can do all those things. When you're working with boxing, you're working in, a couple dozen states, and none of the boxing big-time organizations care that much about it. They don't think they care at all. And I got out all their rules and sat them down and read them. They don't make any sense.
Yeah, no, I'm right there with you. I guess the key is just for the media to make this an interesting topic, keep it in the public eye, and we just keep doing interviews like this and keep breaking stories, and more and more fighters will join it. I mean, I talked to a fighter today, you know, and yesterday also. They want to be involved. Boutte and Pascal want to be involved, and we'll just keep it going.
Yeah, and they should. You know, it's their sport, and they're the ones that are going to have to take the drugs if they want to stay competitive against somebody who's using them. So it's very powerful, that argument, if you can get that to them. They'll figure it out. They're not dumb. They understand.
Yeah. I mean, it kind of, I think, goes both ways. It's like, at some point, people were doing drugs because they wanted to keep up with the Joneses. But I think now it's going the other way, where guys are like, look, I've been clean. I shouldn't have to do drugs in order to keep up. Why don't you be clean, and we'll both just fight, you know? And I think that's what we're starting to get to, which is a great place.
Right. And there's lots of people out there that would help, and they want to see boxing get better. I mean, I'm involved in it. I spend a lot of time on boxing. It's one of the last places in the world that doesn't have a decent program. And it really needs something. And boxing is terribly important to the kids that come up through boxing. I learned that myself when I first got involved 25 years ago. Boxing is crucial to young people in inner cities and where there isn't a lot of money around. They should have fair and equitable testing.
I couldn't agree more. Well, Dr. Cantlin, I just thank you so much. You've given 30 minutes of your time to us, and I know how valuable it is to you. So I look forward to talking to you again. And, man, it's just educational, really. I thank you very much.
Sure. Tell me the program I'm on.
You're on leaveitintheringradio.com. There's a soundbite.
Leaveitintheringradio.com.
There's a soundbite that our critics are going to love. really, just thank you so much. And I'm probably going to end up printing the interview on Max Boxing. I know you're a bit familiar with my work over there. I just think it's very important that people hear what you have to say. As one of the, you know, I think sometimes it gets to be Conte, or it gets to be Heredia, and or maybe Tiger. You know, there's different guys that kind of control it, even Kaiser, the conversation. And I think someone with your depth of experience also needs to be heard. So I appreciate it.
You got to keep after it. Okay.
Will do.
Thanks
All right.
for calling.
All right. Take care.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, there you go. I think a very educated segment we have right now with Dr. Cantlin. And
I feel smarter already.
You know, it's Linus, who's always followed our work and tunes in every Thursday night, put out there, boxing needs to clean out its septic tank. And I tweeted to him, yeah, because it's overflowing. And
it's got some floaters.
Yeah, it's got some floaters, definitely. You know, it really throws you back in how our sport, you know, we're supposed to be responsible for these fighters, you know, as consumers, as boxing fans, and, you know, guys that like to tune in and watch these warriors put on gloves and try to knock each other's heads off. And at the same time, you know, you only have a certain percentage of fans that are really concerned about it and want to see it get cleaned up and changed. We have the other ones that are just plain out arrogant and idiotic. It's sad. You know, it's sad because we have the power as fans to change this. We really do.
Yeah, it's really I like to see the fighters I've talked to the last few days, last couple of weeks, more and more guys are like, you know, contacting and like, how do I get involved? You know, how do I do this? Let me work it out with my people. Hopefully all of these guys come back and keep the momentum going and join the testing movement. You know, it's, you know, it's something that I've kind of given myself to, and Catlin's given 30 years. All these other people are really pushing for this. You know, Margaret Goodman's really, that woman, you know, it really pisses me off when I see Heredia getting all, crazy about Conte runs Vada. And you notice he's been quiet. I've been kind of going at him and he stopped saying it. About the bias. I've kind of shut him down the last 3-4 days. Just because when you trash Vada like that and say, well, Conte is, you know, hired by Vada, or he runs Vada, or Vada runs me as a journalist, what you're doing is you're saying that Margaret Goodman, who has given her whole life to the health and safety of the fighters and health and safety of people, you know, she's a neurologist, she's an actual, you know, doctor out there giving care to people every day of her life. What you're saying is this woman who was a ringside physician and the head of the medical board in Nevada for years, helping to raise the bar for health and safety, adding, the, you know, pushing for better licensing standards and things of that ilk, that you're saying this person started a testing organization so that she could start buying journalists and hire Victor Conte to filter his allegedly dirty fighters all through her program. That's what you're saying, and it doesn't make any sense. It just doesn't. Where's the profit in dumping your own money into something like that? Where she's getting, you know, she's gotten a few athletes, but it's not like she started it and then they got the UFC contract and they just rolled it through and she made millions of dollars. I can understand if something began lock, stock, and barrel like that, but that's not the case. They're like an independent group. So that really upsets me. And it's one of the reasons I want to have Dr. Catlin on, because I wanted kind of more of an independent voice, somebody that, while he's advised VADA, he's not like a VADA employee, and he's also worked for the UCLA Medical Lab and the IOC. He's a guy that's impartial here. I'm glad we kind of raised the bar tonight. And I agree with you, Dave. You come into this business, and at first it's like, wow, I get fight tickets. Wow, I get to be at the fights. I get to talk to these people. It's a little magical and exciting. But at some point, you got to have an empathy for the fighters, and you get to know them, and you start to care about the sport on a level that you can't deny. And either you're dead inside, and you just don't care about the health and safety of the fighters, and you just stuff that down, or I guess you do what we've been doing, and that's kind of pushing this issue in different angles, whether it's mismatches or whatever we've taught you, all the different health and safety issues we've covered on this show, PEDs being a big part of that. You got to do something. You can't take something and leave it worse off or the same. You've got to change it for the better. Hopefully that's what we're doing.
I'm just reading something that Josh McDaniel from the Morning Rewalk, which I've had a lot of folks asking, hey, what's up with the Morning Rewalk? We're going to bring you back. Just been, you know, man, just been really busy trying to get everything organized and up running. You know, we just got a lot of things going on for this app. It's just not as easy. We can't do it overnight. But we're going to get at a certain pace where we're just going to start throwing a lot of stuff out there for fight fans that are downloading the app. Anyways, let's talk some boxing. You know, this Saturday, past Saturday, which was an afternoon, a really good afternoon show. And I got to say this, that when HBO gave Golden Boy the boot, There was a bit concern. There was some concern out there from fight fans. They didn't know whether or not HBO was going to be able to hold it together. Well, how was HBO going to be able to muster up some good fights? But it was all down, like they almost forgot that Top Rank was involved. Now, in the past 3 weeks in a row, we've been having some really good fights. Really good fights. HBO has really kind of figured out for these past 3 weeks, which I'm a bit surprised. They've been on the roll, and I was like, hey, they got to fall off on one of these weeks eventually. But they haven't. They've stepped it up. There's a competition between Showtime and HBO, which is a healthy one for us fight fans. It's healthy because we get good fights. And, you know, when this was announced that Golden Boy was not going to no longer be part of the HBO program, I had said it's either going to be a great thing for boxing fans or a bad thing for boxing fans. And so far, it's turned out to be a great thing.
Sorry, I've just been sitting here juggling yet our next guest. No, Dave, you know, I think that what you hit on right now, you know, people kind of take the short view, right, of Golden Boy Top Rank. Oh, the Cold War. Oh, this is bad. Like, they're just kind of getting this negative mind frame. Nothing's going to change. You got to take a long view of things. One, you got to look back at history and say when Tyson went over at an advanced age to Showtime and a large stable went over there of guys that HBO had invested in, they still ended up making very good fights. Kind of stripping away and cleaning the slate is a good thing to kind of move forward. And you look at that, and you also say, okay, well, Top Rank now has HBO and Golden Boy has Showtime. Well, what's going to happen? Either we get crap products or they start to compete with each other and put their best foot forward. And I think that's what's been going on right now. I mean, look at these fights that, you know, people complain about in-house fights, but I'm sorry, but Rios Alvarado was as good as it gets, man. And the second fight was even better, I thought, on some level. I mean, I don't know. Robert Garcia, I was talking to him in the gym heading into watching Donaire on that last day, and he felt that the first fight was a better fight, but, you know, he might, because this guy came out with it. But I liked the second fight almost better. I thought it was very exciting, and I liked the little bit of adjustments. But I think Top Rank right now is putting its best foot forward. HBO not having some sort of one deal with Golden Boy, or also kind of beholden to Al Heyman and the Mayweather muscles that he was flexing, or the Broner muscles he was flexing. Now they can kind of get the smaller promoters involved, because they weren't even Showtime doesn't seem to be using anybody but Golden Boy, and you can't use one content provider, not in boxing. You need to mix and match. Some guys might be a smaller promoter, and they've got a nice little gem, like a Ruslan Provodnikov. You got to work with a guy like that and not screw him completely in order for him to get a fight with your guy, you know, with a million options and all of that. And so I think right now it's good. Competition is good, and it's going to continue to be good for some time. Now, this new thing that Bob Arum's doing, this is crazy, the amount of events that they're putting on. I mean, the press release said they'd done the Triple Crown here with this Radio City Music Hall fight with Donaire and Rigondeaux, doing the new Yankee Stadium as well as, you know, Madison Square Garden. They've hit all the big events. But they've also gone to China to Macau with the Olympic Chinese gold medalist Zhu Shiming. And
they call him, I believe they're calling them the Hands of Stone. And I got to tell you, I tweeted it out when I watched the fight. I was like, it's more like digging for gold. The footwork was really bad. The overhand right, he gassed out, I think, within the third, fourth round. And I got to keep repeating this. I got to keep saying this, man. And I'm tired of hearing, look, if a trainer did very well with one fighter, it doesn't mean that they're going to do well with every other one of them, every other fighter that's put in front of them. There's got to be a sense of timing with them, chemistry. You know, it's a big thing. If Amir Khan, by somehow some chance, gets knocked out by Julio Kid Diaz, which could happen. This is boxing. It doesn't mean that Hunter is a bad trainer. It just means that the time was not there for him to develop him or help him out. So what she mean here is, here's a guy that slaps his punches, is 31 years old, made a lot of tremendous great noise in China. But you got to sit there and you look at it and go, you know what? I just don't see it. But you know what they did, which was genius for Top Rank, was put the undercard together, and it made it a great night, a great afternoon of boxing, which I loved. Absolutely loved, you know? And that was something that I thought that was missing from the HBO program. Because at the time, they were trying to fill it up with Golden Boy and some Top Rank, and they were just trying to headline the names they were trying to push out there because they only had a minimal of time slots to get things rolling. With Golden Boy, we can't criticize them yet with Showtime. We got to still see what they're bringing to the table, because they haven't had a whole lot of network showing ever since the announcement of HBO closing the doors on them. So we still got to find out. And I think they're going to be bringing some. I mean, look at their cards they're bringing up. I mean, Trout, Canelo's a good fight. Can't take that away. Putting Adner Morris and Ponce de Leon, which, oh, God, that's just a phenomenal fight on the Mayweather-Guerrero. They're mustering up some things. So, though I'm kind of bagging on the Chinese fighter, I think a lot of fight fans were too.
Well,
I like the way they build up that card. I just love the fights that were put together. They even threw it on Solo Boxeo. And, of course, Sweet Boxing got hold of the Japan television, untelevised fights here in America, and he put them up together. And they were all steady. Consistent. What were you going to say, Gable?
Yeah, I mean, I think he is what he is. He's you know, they like him because of who he is as an amateur, what he was to the country. I don't know if he's ever going to be developed into a pro, but, you know, he's going to bring the folks out, and he's going to, garner a lot of media coverage, man. In China, he did, it was like 1,000 articles or something written about him.
Yeah.
There was somebody just tweeted me that, there is some dispute over them, Top Rank saying there was like 300 million viewers, but I haven't read the article just yet. Somebody just sent it to me. But, people are always looking to shoot things down. I mean, it's promotion. So you are going to see a little bit of hyperbole, but I think he's good for the sport. I mean, as far as that market is concerned, it opens the gateway for Pacquiao to kind of do his Macau reunion, you know, kind of not reunion tour, but farewell tour. So it is what it is. I mean, that company is really making inroads into the rest of the world, and I think if you can do some things over there and make good fights in the meantime, because the card was very good, then yeah, I think it's a good thing for boxing. I don't see how it's a negative at all.
You know, it's not a negative. It's not a negative.
But the kid, you know, the way he fights. I mean, no, I couldn't stop laughing when you were describing it because it was pretty spot on. You know, you're not going to be building a, you know, it's not going to be the Shimming Dynasty. Let's just put it that way. You know, but is it going to draw attention to other things? Yeah, I think so. I want to see a fight in Macau personally. I think that'd be fun.
Even though. I think with Bob Arum, whatever he decides and how he's building them up, which I think he's using the whole China thing because he's like a rock star out there. It's obviously it's a great market, and we got to sit back and wait how the matchmakers are going to do what they need to do. You know what I mean? And obviously they're going to use every bit, whatever's left of the kid, and make tons of money. And make China another country of you know, to love the pro style of boxing. It's a great way too to hold fights out there and to get fighters that are here from the United States or from Mexico or Puerto Rico out over there, so that the country of China gets a chance to witness these fighters as well. And when we draw in another set of new fans.
Yeah, I mean, that's really the name of the game. Let me check in. I'm sorry, I'm just kind of texting back and forth. We've got Abel Sanchez confirmed for 6 o'clock, so we need to call him in. Let me send you the number real quick. It's one of those kind of juggling days here on Leaving in the Ring. This is like crazy. Yeah, I know. It's all this dead air.
Dad, we're catching some folks right now on Leaving the Ring. You want to call in 347-215-7598. And we could talk some boxing. We're going to be calling in now. I believe you said Abel Sanchez. Is that who you said?
Yeah, Abel Sanchez, the trainer of Triple G, Gennady Golovkin. And it's funny, too. You see somebody, Bernie Bermacell. Thanks. His publicist.
Wow. You know, I'm doing that on purpose, right?
Yeah, you're spilling me, Smalls. I'm already having trouble with my thought process as it is. He puts out that picture on Twitter of Triple G. It was the BWA dinner tonight, their awards dinner, and there he is with like a dinner jacket and like a yellow T-shirt and like jeans. He's all dressed up. I'm glad he decided to go formal tonight. Usually, he just wears a T-shirt.
We're calling Abel Sanchez right now here on Leaving the Ring Radio.
Hello.
Abel. Is this Abel
Yes.
Sanchez? ¿Qué pasó,
this
brother?
Is Abel.
¿Qué pasó? This is Dave Duenas and Gabriel Montoya here on Leaving the Ring Radio. How you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you guys?
Doing good. Hey, thanks for taking the time to speak to us here on Leaving the Ring.
Oh, it's a pleasure.
So you had your young fighter. You've had a nice little streak here. Let's back all the way up, Abel. Thanks for joining us. To Triple G taking on Ishida. Also, you had to kind of come back from Japan, right? Or from Macau, Monaco rather, and then go off to Houston to handle the Joel Diaz Jr. fight. Take us back to your thoughts about Triple G and his performance.
You know, I think that he was very aware of not performing as well as he could have on the Rosado fight, and I think he was looking to make a statement on his own. It was nothing that we talked about, but being a perfectionist, he wanted to make a statement in that Ishida fight, and he did. It was devastating. It kind of scared me a little bit when he hit the bottom rope, but thank God he's okay.
How is that, you know, balancing that I love knockouts, but and I'm sure you do too. I mean, you've had some of the great punchers in the sport, but balancing that of celebrating, you know, your guy just won, and then kind of a scary moment where you're watching the guy that is pretty out of it, but I mean, he recovered seemingly pretty quickly. What's that moment like?
It's scary, but it wasn't so much that he got knocked out. Guys get knocked out and don't necessarily get hurt by getting knocked out. When he hit the rope, the bottom rope, that's what scared me, because that's how, you know, that snaps the head.
Yeah, that was nasty.
Yeah. So that's really what scared me. A knockout really is not that bad because it's part of the sport, and I think that you get caught in a chin, you get caught with a good shot, you're going down, you get knocked out, you're going to wake up. But the fact that he hit the bottom rope was what scared me.
Did you expect him? I mean, I thought Ishida was going to go rounds. I thought he was more of a rugged guy. Were you surprised by that? I mean, you see Triple G every day, so I imagine not. But I was a little shocked that he just put him out so fast. What were your thoughts there?
A healthy Gennady Golovkin that is not dealing with a cold. There's not going to be very many guys that are going to go the distance with him. There's going to be very few guys that are going to be able to take the punishment at 160 pounds that Gennady can deliver. I wasn't surprised. I was surprised that it was one shot. I thought it was maybe going to be a good combination, but it was a devastating right hand right on the chin, and that did surprise me that it was just one.
Now, today they announced Matthew Macklin versus Gennady. One, it's a very aggressive fight schedule you guys got for him. So I'd like you to talk about that kind of activity, but talk to me about that fight.
Well, at the beginning of the year, I spoke with Tom Loeffler, and after speaking with Gennady, and we wanted to stay busy this year. I wanted him to fight at least five times this year. He just turned 31 years old on April the 8th, and we haven't got much time to be messing around and keeping him on a shelf. So the fact that they just announced the 29th against Macklin is perfect. That's, 3 months right after this one, and hopefully he'll fight again sometime in September. But it's a good fight. I think that Macklin brings a little credibility to Gennady as far as fighting a middleweight, so-called middleweight. But it's still going to be a painful night for Matthew Macklin.
I just think it's a perfect meshing of styles. You know, here's these two guys that are super aggressive. I think they both got nice power. Macklin returned successfully after being stopped. So we kind of feel, I think it is, it's a perfectly legitimate fight and an exciting fight. The winner of that guy gets closer and closer, I think, to fighting Sergio Martinez. For Macklin, maybe it's a road back to a rematch. For your guy, it's just going to be an action fight that puts him on a big stage. Let's talk about your other fighter, one of your other fighters, Joel Diaz Jr., who hasn't had the most aggressive fight schedule in the world, but he just got back in the ring last week, and I really enjoyed the fight. I thought he looked very good. Maybe a little rusty early on, but he got the stoppage against a really rugged guy in Victor Sanchez. Can you break down that fight for us and how you felt?
Yeah, he hasn't fought. He hadn't fought in probably 8 months. I think his last fight was August the 18th. So it's been a while. He had a couple scheduled and some under. I think he had one scheduled at the end of in November and one in February, but the one in February he fell and he hurt his wrist, so we had to call that one off. So he was a little rusty, a little anxious. We fought a perfect kind of opponent, a guy that's going to make you learn, a guy that's going to give you the hard, rugged fight, the type of fight that you're going to need later on in your career to have that under your belt. Victor Sanchez had fought a lot of several undefeated fighters and gone the distance with, in fact, he went the distance, I think, with Francisco Vargas, who is 14-0 or 15-0. So we knew going in that it wasn't going to be a guy that was going to be hit with one or two shots and then go out. So I thought it was going to be a little longer. I thought it maybe 7 or 8 rounds or even a decision because he was that rugged guy. But Joel's a special talent also. Like Gennady. He's a kid that just loves to fight, loves to train, has heavy hands, and is consistently learning in the gym from all the other guys that are in the gym, the older guys, and myself, of course, picking up everything that he can to make himself a better fighter.
So I know that they were trying to get him for this week, right, April 13th. Why is it that they moved him back? And I guess now they're looking for more of a an appropriate fight for him. I thought they were going to have like a kind of an aggressive schedule heading up to, I think it was looking maybe an ESPN level fight or something closer to the summer. What are the immediate plans?
Well, in talking to Mike Crisho, his manager, the promoter Mario at 360 had mentioned the 13th and also the 20th, actually. But I kind of nixed that. I want the kid to fight regularly, but I don't want to put him in without proper training and proper sparring and a proper rest. Also, he had a rugged fight in Houston, and I wanted him to take a couple weeks off of out of sparring, out of being in the ring. He's in the gym now, but he's just getting back. I mean, he's a young man, and I don't want to rush him.
Is you got to build him, you know, you got to build him right, but consistently and keep him fighting.
Abel, let me ask you this, because a lot of times when we see guys with big punches, you know, that the trainer and the fighter themselves, they end up just kind of sticking with that. They believe that a punch is always going to get them out of a situation. We see it time and time again. With yourself being involved in boxing for so many years and having a chance to work with some of the best hitters of the sport, how do you make sure that the puzzle of a puncher is not always solved as easily?
But one of the ways is making sure that the promoter and the manager understand that I don't want to see a 90-10 fight or a 80-20 fight. I want to see a 60-40 fight. I want to see an opponent for my guys that is going to give my guys the opportunity to practice some of the things we're working on in the gym. I want my guys to be able to have to think through a fight. The longer it goes, the more you get used to using the things that you're practicing in the gym, as in what Gable just said about Houston. Portuala was a couple rounds before he got his timing and his distance and went about pinpointing his shots with Victor. So I'm not a proponent of early knockouts. I want my guys to work. And if you do that, then it teaches them that they're going to get the knockouts, but they're going to get the knockouts by setting things up, not just by going out and trying to bomb somebody out. If you saw Ishida fight with Gennady, my plan was for Gennady to move around in the first couple rounds and kind of feel him out. There was no reason to go right at him like a Tyson would. Feel him out and see what he's got and see if we can make it a chess match. And then once we figure him out, then go ahead and put him away. And it's exactly what happened and exactly what Joel did. It's just that the first couple rounds for Joel, because of the inactivity, I think he was a little hesitant.
That's the thing. I mean, I think he gets hit a few times, and both of them actually kind of seem like fighters that it takes a few punches, and then they're in the fight, and they kind of wake up. Joel's been up there for so long. I mean, at this point, do you not even know how good he is? You need to see him in that just full test, and do you think this was a good look into things you hadn't seen before?
What I saw in this fight is I saw him adjust to some of the things that Victor was doing. I saw him relax after the second or third round. I saw the things that I needed to see to move on to the next step. And the next step doesn't mean a title or anything like that. The next step means, okay, do we keep practicing this? Is this the direction that we want to go with this young man? Or do we try to mold him in a different way? He only has 11 fights, or now 12, but we have a long way to go. We have a long way to go to make the kind of fighter that is not just going to win fights, but he's going to win fights decisively and eventually become a TV fighter, a fan-friendly fighter, a kind of fighter that will be on the big shows. That's my goal. I don't particularly look for just to win fights. I want my guys to look spectacular so that we can be on the big show.
Let me. I got two questions for you. One is I completely agree with what you're saying. You know, when they put Gennady on a pay-per-view by type of card. Does that, do you, in your opinion, does that hurt his exposure in the States? Because, you know, I know a lot of fight fans, including myself, were like, pay-per-view already? Or was there a certain reason that happened? And here's my next question. You think that it's a, as a trainer, I know Gennady is ready to jump in with anybody, but as a trainer, do you think that the assumption that Martinez and him should be going at it this year, do you think that's a bit early?
To answer your first question, the reason it was a pay-per-view fight, it wasn't because of Gennady. The pay-per-view fight was because of the that tournament that they were having. It just so happened that Gennady
right.
was the main event in this tournament. As far as it being a pay-per-view also, I needed to keep Gennady busy. And we had dates from HBO for January and for June. There was nothing in between. That's too long for me to have Gennady inactive. I want Gennady to be fighting every three and a half months. So that was the reason for Tom Loeffler, in talking to Gennady and I and the managers, decided that he needed to fight sometime in March. They were able to put him on that card, but it really wasn't a pay-per-view for Gennady. The second question, this being a business, it's not when Gennady is ready for Martinez or when Martinez wants to fight him. It's when the business of boxing in the numbers are correct for not only Gennady but also for Martinez. If it takes Gennady a couple more fights to build up where Tabella and Martinez feel that it's profitable for everybody, well then so be it. But we just have to stay busy with Gennady, and that fight will fall into place because of the economics, not because they want to fight. They want to fight each other. I'm sure Martinez wants to prove his mettle, and they're saying that this guy can beat him, and I'm sure Gennady thinks that he can beat him. So it's not a matter of them wanting to fight each other. I think it's economics.
What did you think of that ending of the JD fight? That bother you? I mean, the guy didn't seem to be throwing punches back for the longest time, and I think that's why the ref stopped it. Am I wrong?
You know, he was taking too many headshots, and unless you're there and you can hear the sound of those punches landing in that boy's head, you have to believe that the referee done it for the Victor's best interest. And remember, and we have to remember too, we were in Houston, in Victor's hometown,
right.
with a referee from that area. So it wasn't like it was a hometown stoppage, and JD was the hometown fighter, and he got the win. It was a fight stopped by the referee from Victor's town, not from our town. So I unfortunately, I was involved in a fight in Moscow about a year and a half ago where one of my guys put another fighter into coma and the fighter later died. I don't want to see that again. I don't ever want to be involved in that situation again. And if it takes stopping the fight before it's too late, instead of a punch or two punches before it's too late, I'd rather have that and have controversy than to have somebody hurt. But after they stopped the fight, the cornerman for Victor come over to me and says he was just taking too many headshots. I was going to stop it myself. This is what he said.
Yeah, that's excellent information. I appreciate that, because it's, you know, there are some people that felt like, oh, it was a hometown decision, and then I was you know, just watching it again yesterday and then again today, just kind of taking some notes, and it just seemed like he didn't throw punches for a long time and he was taking flush ones. And yeah, I agree with you with all that. Well, Abel, I don't want to hog all your time. I appreciate you coming on and checking in with us. And I'm looking forward. I think I'm coming out for that fight for Macklin Triple G. I just can't see. That's a can't-miss fight, right?
That is in Connecticut on the 29th, right? Is that what you're saying?
Yes. Yeah, the Foxwoods.
Yeah, in Connecticut. Yeah, Foxwoods, yeah.
I think I'm heading out for that. I'm not sure.
Okay.
Yeah, it's just too much action to miss in person. So, well, thank you, man, and I'll talk to you soon.
I appreciate you guys having me on. Thank you to your listeners, and I hope to talk to you soon.
Cool.
Thank you.
All right, man.
Thanks, man.
Bye-bye. All right,
bye-bye. Abel Sanchez here with us here on Leaving the Ring Radio. let's patch in some fight fans.
Let's patch in some of these angry people. I just had a guy telling me that he's not a violent person, but he wants to smack me around when he sees me. You know, there was a guy yesterday on Twitter that was that was really questioning about the Conte thing and the Heredia thing, and maybe I misunderstood him, but he seemed like he was being kind of rude and he was being a bit obtuse. And, you know, I'm kind of a busy guy. I've got a few big announcements coming up, but one that actually pertains to boxing. And you guys will know this. I won't be able to announce it during the show, but certainly by next episode we'll be talking about it. And I think it'll make a little bit of waves within the sport. I think people will talk about it. This is a hot topic. But I think when people are rude, and this guy particularly, they start calling me Conte's butt buddy. I won't even refer to some of the phrases they've said in reference to me and Conte. And it was one of the reasons I brought Don Catlin on. It's a guy that I've talked to before. He doesn't know the name of the show, but he knows me and he knows my work. He's also an older guy. I mean, give him a break. But
Where am I?
Yeah, I mean that's. But you know, certainly his mind is pretty sharp as regards
right.
to everything. It's kind of like enough is enough. Are we going to be children about this? And also, if I block you, and then, yeah, I continue to talk bad about it, that's kind of my prerogative. And it's nothing that I wouldn't say to you in person. But I think people really cross the lines of good taste. And then they go even further when you block them, and they say even more awful things. I think people need to really monitor how they talk to people. And I know I'm kind of rude to folks, but you have to think about that, the fact that I probably, if there's just one of you talking bad to me, I think there's probably like 10 people that usually are coming at me trying to say something.
Think of it this way. You're normally rude to folks sometimes on the Twitter and stuff, and I'm normally rude to people in person. So we balance it out.
Well, what's funny is this guy's complaining, this El Judicial boxing fan 808-805, he's complaining that I've blocked him. I don't really even recall ever dealing with this human being, and now he's actually blocked me, so he doesn't think that I can see him. I've unblocked him, and I'm watching all the things that he's saying about me. I'm printing his picture. I'm printing the text where a tweet where he threatened to attack me if he sees me or mention that he wants to. And that'll be great information for the police when he tries to. He'll also have to deal with me if he tries to attack me. And believe me.
Yeah, you know these guys.
They're not going to.
I always say stuff. I have one guy right now. Just send me your address, but then you block me. Okay.
Right.
Anyways, just chatting some fight fans. And let's talk some boxing here. I'm not worried about these little Twitter gangsters.
I just think people need to grow the hell up and like realize like, one, you're not going to do anything. You're like, you know, I don't know who you are. If you come at me at a fight, you're attacking me at my place of business, there's security there, believe me, I'll make sure after I get my shots in and have my way, I will make sure that the cops take you away and keep you there for as long as possible. So please, keep with the threats, try something at the fights, and just see what happens. I welcome it. I consider it an early Christmas gift or a birthday gift. It is a great present to me for you to do Audition Dead Series. Bring it.
Yeah, I think people need to realize that, and I always go back to this, is that, you know, this is boxing. You guys are just getting out of hand. You can't take somebody, you know, slapping you back with some knowledge so you revert down to being a child. It's all fine and dandy, whatever.
You know, most people,
I think it's hilarious.
I'll block people that are following me that are being rude or whatever, and I'll block them to shrug them off. I call it's the block shrug. I don't keep them blocked. I just block them so they can't follow me. It removes.
I just don't block them at all. I just kind of like, you know what, say whatever you want, because eventually, you know, I mean, look, listen, if I'm on your mind 24/7, that's obviously I did something right. But I want to patch in some fight fans. Let's patch in. Let's go with. Let's see who's been on hold for the longest here. Jesus, we got some guys here on hold for a while. Let's go with area code 843. You're on live right now. Leaving the ring. What's on your mind, brother? Area code 843. You're on live. No? Okay. Let's go with area code. Area code 214. You're on live right now. Leave the ring. What's on your mind?
Hey, how you guys doing?
Doing good, brother. How you doing, man?
Hey, I came to ask you guys about the Canelo and Chalk fight, and I've been on YouTube and Facebook, and I've been seeing, you know, I try not to feed into this, like you guys said earlier. I've been reading the comments, and it seemed like everybody literally is just down in Chalk, like he don't deserve this, and he doesn't have a shot in hell, he's going to get killed, and I'm like, you guys are going to be real shocked. You never know. Yeah, with Chalk.
Really, you know what? I've been getting the opposite, to tell you the truth. I mean, I've seen a lot of folks throwing out there that this is an easy fight. Even Trout himself saying this is an, you know, one of the easiest fights that he's going to be getting involved with. I don't know, Gable. I mean, what sense have you been getting out there from fight fans and even from media? Because some of the media cats that I've been speaking to, they're really not. They're really counting out Canelo. They're really not even thinking Canelo is going to be able to pose a real major threat.
People are kind of tripping on that one. I'm going to stick with my original pick with Trout, just because I went with him first, and I'm sticking with it. I like the style, but I'm as things go along, I'm kind of scared, you know, about my
it's
pick.
It's a real competitive fight, man.
I think it's a real 50-50 fight,
yeah.
And you got to almost say 60-40 because Canelo's got the edge, right? I mean, he's got the rematch clause. He's the one calling all the shots.
And I even threw this out there, too. I was talking to, I can't remember his name, from the UK. I had a great conversation with him on Twitter. But I threw out that I'm picking Canelo, and here's the reason why. Because if Trout...
Steve Bunce?
No, not Steve. When Trout sometimes gets into his relaxed mode, he could tend to be boring. And he can leave, you know, certain pots to that Canelo can kind of dazzle everybody with his combinations. Now, when Canelo throws his 4-6 punch combinations, he ends up kind of he sits back and looks at his artwork, and he allows you to kind of pick up the pace from there. That's what Trout has to do. If Trout doesn't do that and tries to fight a Trout fight, and it goes to a 12-round decision, I have a big feeling that if the decision is going to sway with Canelo.
Yeah, I do too.
Yeah, I mean,
Unfortunately, you know, Trout is the champion in my eyes. He's the more accomplished kid that's been at 154. But it's a sad part of boxing that the guy that brings the number, the guy that brings the crowd, he more or less has the upper hand every time out from the workman fighter. Not saying that Canelo's not a workman fighter. He is. He's definitely got to where he's at by putting in the work, and he's fought whoever he's gotten. But let's not forget, too, that Canelo's his own promoter. Canelo's his own boss. I know that he's with Golden Boy, but, you know, I think some fans were saying, hey, I don't think Golden Boy really wanted this fight. And I have to kind of agree with them. I don't think Golden Boy did want this fight. It was Canelo who wanted to make proof that he's the real deal because of the heavy criticism, obviously from us as well. We've criticized his step up ever since 154. Hasn't fought a guy that's 154. So I think this was his way of saying, I need to shut these critics up finally. I got to applaud him for it, man. Hey, finally, you know, you did something right for the fans, not just for yourself.
Yeah, I always agree. I think Canelo did want to fight. Now, it seemed like Golden Boy didn't want to fight. I really think Golden Boy really avoided the Trout fight for a long time. But I think Canelo, he's saying that, hey, I want to beat Trout. If I beat Trout, that means I'm entitled to a shot at Mayweather.
You know what? Here's the thing, too. Even if he beats Trout, is he really entitled? I mean, obviously, it's gonna do good on his resume. He beat Austin Trout.
Right.
But I still say the kid has a lot of room to grow. You know, he has time to develop. But here's the sad part. If Trout beats him and beats him convincingly or even stops him, I know that Trout was throwing out that after beating Canelo, he should be a pay-per-view fighter. In the perfect world, Trout, you should. But this is boxing.
Right.
I don't see him being a pay-per-view guy. I see a guy that still is going to have to stay hungry and still keep his grind and still do his hustle and try to get himself out there continuously with every fight. He's got to prove that he's the best 154-pounder out there. Regardless of the names he's already taken, he's just got to keep doing it. That's the shitty part of boxing sometimes.
Yeah, I think he's going to take that Winky Ryder, that kind of Winky Ryder approach of just, you know, grinding out, and then eventually get that shot. He beat the best guy out there, and you know.
Great comparison, man. That's a great way of putting it, you know, because Winky was that guy at 154. He was doing everything right. The guy should have been a star, but he didn't become a star till late in his career. Trout,
yes.
I said this a long time ago. I said, you know, Trout to me is that really good contender that if you're off your game, he'll just take advantage of you, you know.
Right.
Is he going to be a great fighter? I'm not sure yet. You know what I mean? Yeah. There's still a lot of time in his career, but he's definitely somebody you just can't write off at all.
Oh, and one more question. And you said how you're not sure if Canelo deserves a shot at Mayweather. So you think he need to go ahead and clean out 154 first and then get a shot at Mayweather? Or, because I really believe he deserves a shot at Mayweather. Because if you really think about it, ain't nobody else ever Mayweather to fight other than Canelo.
He deserves a shot. He deserves a shot with Floyd because of the draw and the money that he brings. That
yeah.
Absolutely. He's got that. He's got the economic part. But I think you hit it right there, man. 154. There's a lot of work still to be done at 154. You beat Trout. Okay. That's a great start. You beat a guy that's beat a lot of durable 154-pounders. A guy that put in the work to be called one of the best 154-pounders is Austin Trout. But just because you beat him, hey, man, you still got more work to do. You know, there's Angulo and Lara going to be going at it at 154.
Yeah.
You can go after them. You can go back and get Amadorosian. You can get other guys. You know, Devin Rodriguez. There's guys out there that deserve a shot. You know, Rosado's going to be fighting on that Floyd Mayweather card, Guerrero card. Hey, man, Gabriel, you know, he stepped it up. He won at 154 to face Gennady. Give him a shot. There's guys out there that are formidable. And the Mayweather, as long as Floyd doesn't lose his next fight with Guerrero, he's going to be around for the waiting.
Right.
All right, brother. Thanks, man, for calling in. I really appreciate it.
All right, appreciate it, guys.
I have returned.
All right, fans, you want to call in 347-215-7598. You certainly can. Let's talk some boxing here on 3 hours of boxing talk on Leaving the Ring Radio. I believe, though, we're going to be calling in Justin Fortune next here on Leaving the Ring. Then we're going to have Julio Kid Diaz call in. We're going to talk to him about Amir Khan, him heading out to England to do the impossible that a lot of fight fans saying he can't pull off. Even though his brother was the trainer of Timothy Bradley, told us, hey, I'll put 5-10,000 that we're going to come back with the belt, with the win.
Dave, are you thinking about making some money? Is that what you're saying right now? yeah, that's just not going to happen. I mean, I don't mean to be disrespectful, but that's just not going to happen. I'm passing you Justin's number. I haven't heard if we can call him early. I know we had it set up at 7, but he should be available around this time. But I'm going to give you the number, and then I'll let you know if he's all good. Why is it? Is this happened to you too with your phone during the show that it just blows up all through the show? You get direct messages, you get the Skype messages, Facebook. It's like I got to shut this thing down so I can kind of focus in on the show. Let me check with Justin. I'll be right back.
Go right ahead. I'm going to patch in another fight fan here on Leaving the Ring Radio. Don't forget, call in 347-215-7598. Or if you want, you can download the app and you can call directly from your app. And you can enjoy all the features that we have on the mobile app. If you have Apple, iPhone, Android, doesn't matter. You're able to download it. Remember, if you have the old version of it, which is not the 2.0, just uninstall the old one if you have Android or iPhone. And uninstall the old one and go get your 2.0. You can definitely download the new mobile app. It's very interactive. Trust me, you'll love it, man. So far, getting a lot of great feedback on it. And let's patch in some more fight fans here on Leaving the Ring. Let's get area code 908. You're on live right now on Leaving the Ring. What's on your mind? 908. You there, brother? No. Okay.
The guys I've blocked are really excited tonight. Man, there's a lot of hate out there. This guy, Not Sure 9, says, F bitch made Gabe. They yap when you confront them face to face. They drop their panties like bitches. Dave, have you ever known me to drop my panties like a bitch? Just be
only
honest.
After I give you a few drinks.
Yeah, that's true. I am a bit of a lightweight. I am a bit of a lightweight.
You're an easy date.
I am pretty easy. I'm always looking to meet, though, you know. Not anymore, though. Wow. What do you say, you know? What do you say? And it's kind of funny. This guy says, this boxing fan 805 with the underscore between the boxing and the fan says it's easy to talk shit about people when you've blocked them. I'm not a violent guy, but I like to smack you around sometime. And I don't have him blocked now, but he has me blocked. So it's kind of funny. It's like he's kind of being hypocritical, would you say? I guess I would.
Yeah.
But I'd also know what that word means. What can you say? Do you know?
Well, not everybody's going to love you.
But Dave, I want them to so bad. Yeah, I mean, what are you going to do? You know, yeah. You know, just got to focus on the positive, and I haven't heard back from Justin yet, but we'll get him at 7.
Let's catch in some pipe bands here on Leave a Ring real quick. Let's talk some boxing. Area code 951, you're on live right now, Leave a Ring. What's on your mind?
Hey, guys. Just wondering, what do you guys think of Guerrero's chances, and how would you beat Mayweather? I mean, how do you get through that defense?
You know, that's a good question, man. I mean, I think, you know what's funny is that Floyd on his All Access debut last night, what he said was, you know, and I agreed with him. He said, 43 are trying to figure them out. You know, they all try to do the same thing, which is kind of bum rush them and you know, land a lot of shots. But it hasn't been successful. There is a game plan of beating Guerrero because he's lost before. But, you know, I think with Robert, what Robert poses against Floyd is there's two things that I like what Guerrero's bringing right now. One is that, I don't know, man, I just get this mad sense that in his eyes that he just has no respect for Floyd. And all the other guys that Floyd's been kind of facing in the past have had their doubts of beating Floyd. You know, where even like Miguel Cotto, I wouldn't say he didn't fear Floyd because he obviously did, he showed it the night that they fought. But if this was a younger Miguel Cotto, a fresher Miguel Cotto, I just sit back and I go, I wonder, what would have been? And I think that the way to beat Floyd Mayweather is to not to always throw the same shots over and over and over. You got to mix them up. I've said this plenty of times, you know, and here's another thing. When Floyd likes to put that shoulder in there, you got to be a little dirty with it. You got to, you know, hit him on his back, hit him on the back of his neck. I had a trainer one time tell me that, you know, that's what the old school guys, Jake LaMotta would have done that because he would have said, like, okay, you want to turn your back on me? You want to bend down on the waist? I'm going to make you pay for it so you don't do it again. And that's the ref's job to control it. But it's the fighter's job to make openings, create openings, make the guy not want to do the same thing that's been working for them. So that's what Guerrero's camp's got to do. But at the same time, you got to have more than one game plan, A, B, C, D, and E, and F, all the way down to Z. And you got to think like that. And the major, major thing I think that goes in with Guerrero is conditioning. Dude, if this conditioning's not up to par, I'm sorry. Floyd's going to pick you apart. That's why Floyd wants you to bum rush him and throw all these shots because he's just waiting. He's waiting. That's what he does best, and he counters. So Guerrero's got a lot on his plate, and I've been pretty vocal about it. I'm actually picking Guerrero to beat Floyd. But hey, what do I know? Gabriel, what's your thoughts, brother?
I think Guerrero has a really good shot. I think he's rugged. It's timing is everything, you know, and Floyd. We'll see how fresh he is. I mean, a lot of people say, you know, I think the people are making apologies for him, say that, oh, well, he gave more of an exciting fight against Cotto because he loves the fans so much. I don't know how much he loves the fans, but and I don't think that's necessarily true. I think that's just making apologies for him. He's getting older. He's 36. He's slowing down. And Cotto was able to put together a really smart game plan with Pedro Diaz, where they kind of worked their way slowly up. They left the head alone. They attacked everything below it, and they did it in combination so that one good shot would get through, a quality shot would get through eventually. I think that's very, very smart. If Guerrero isn't distracted by all the weird stuff that's gone on early on with this gun charge, and I don't think he is, then they'll be devising a plan, I think, very similar, to be physical, take the fight to Floyd and kind of grind him rather than try to outbox him and outspeed him in space. You can't do that. You've got to protect the body, break it down, break down that lead arm. And, you know, the arm is used for the roll, but it's also used for other things. But it's his lead. I would destroy it and leave him with one arm so you can kind of shoot through his shield and get at him. That's always been, you know, my feeling. And it's being a southpaw. You're going to have to learn how to catch that lead foot, step on it, hold it in place, take advantage of that, get away with it all night long. And avoid headshots or headbutt. If you're going to be headbutting, make sure you're the one doing it, not getting headbutted. I'd also would prep the refs for, and maybe even do it with tape, and show tape of all the way he uses the forearm and the elbow illegally, and say, this is something that we really want you guys to look for. This is not a completely legal move, and points should be taken. And I would hammer it home like a Phil Jackson Pat Riley would to the refs to kind of prepare them for the next game so that it's in their minds, and then when they see it, they call it. So I would prepare on all those levels. That said, I'm probably just picking Floyd by decision, but I think it's going to be a much better and more competitive fight than most people would think.
You know, that age is just catching up, too. You know, I don't care what anybody says. You can't Superman forever. We saw this with some of the best athletes out there. You know, we want them to stay ageless. We want them to stay continually doing what they're doing in that ring. But age is something that nobody's been able to conquer and beat. And I think with Floyd right now, we're starting to see a little bit of that, you know. And I think Guerrero sees it, too. He even mentioned it. You know, his legs are not as – they don't look as quick. You know, even though his reaction sometimes to things are a little – you know, it's still sharp. Those haven't deteriorated at all. But if you go back and watch that Miguel Cotto, and I've watched that Miguel Cotto fight a lot because there was – there, you know, like even some of the biggest Floyd fans, one of my boys, Rashid – checkmate. He's dude, this guy's a Floyd Mayweather nut hugger. Okay. But he called me up and he was like, wow, dude, I think money's getting old, man. I mean, why was he doing those little pot shots? I've never seen him do something like that. And he was doing them a lot, you know, and you could kind of see those body shots that Cotto was landing was taking its toll, was really doing some damage where Floyd looked a little concerned about keeping, you know, some reserve in the tank. And that's why we didn't see those heavy shots. You know, we didn't see him get as mobile. We didn't see him, pull back and throw the straight right. But that's my biggest concern with Robert the Ghost Guerrero is the right hand, because the face of Robert is like a magnet for the right hand. They really have to study that. They got to work on that. You know, it's just not about being, you know, a rugged, you know. It's about being intelligent and rugged. You go back and you look at the maulers in the back in the days. They were smart about it. Joe Frazier, you know, he was smart about being a mauler. You know, Jake LaMotta was smart about being a mauler. So that's what Guerrero's got to look into. You know, you have your faith with God, but at the same time, you got to have your faith in going back to what the old greats did to the smooth fighters. So there's a lot on the plate for Guerrero, obviously. Floyd is going to be he's always going to have the upper hand of anybody that he steps in the ring with, unless it's like Sergio Martinez, a much bigger man. But I'm going to go with Guerrero. Thanks for the call. I put him back on hold. We're going to patch in some other fight fans if we're not going to be calling in Justin Fortune just yet.
Some interesting conversations going out on Twitter tonight. BJ Flores and Conte are now having a conversation.
I want to talk a little bit about the little guys that happened this Saturday night. Some great fights that happened Saturday night on HBO. You know, the Hawaii Punch. I mean, you know, this kid should have been on HBO a long time ago. Didn't get that exposure. Finally did. Didn't get the win, but, dude, you know what? He's a warrior. Kudos to him. He's a warrior. Estrada came and brought it to him. It was a great, sensational fight. Estrada, can that kid take a punch or what?
Oh, dude, this guy, Estrada. Well, I was ringside for the Chocolatito fight. And
that was a good fight, yep.
Yeah, and there everybody was like, well, is this guy really good or is Chocolatito not that good? And now the more you see it, you see this guy, Estrada, in this fight. I mean, obviously, he's the real deal. What a welcome addition to the boxing scene. This guy is. No, the guy can take a punch, and he can deliver. I was really impressed by what he was able to get done in that fight, man. It really just blew me away. These guys are funny. I'm sorry, I'm getting a little distracted by Twitter. I've got this other guy, NorCal Boxing, Everardo25. He tweets at me, laugh out loud, this guy, Gabriel, you're making too many enemies. You're better off shutting down, and he misspells the word shutting, your Twitter account, and then he immediately deleted it because these are the brave people that we're dealing with. Well, I'm sorry they're NorCal Boxing. I'm taking a picture, a screen grab of it. You didn't get to delete it in time, and I'll be adding you to, you know, this little file that I'm creating. You know, violence on the Internet is not going to be tolerated. And this kind of hashtag bullies, these guys, they're really in for it at some point.
Well, you know, like
really just kind of gathering all the information.
you eventually, whatever you tweet, whatever you talk about, you're going to have to face it when it comes down to it, you know. But I want to get away from that, man. I want to stick to boxing. We're taking it away from our listeners. They're listening to hear us talk boxing. So I want to go back with Brian and how impressive Estrada Jaw was. I like the fact that what wasn't working for him, he didn't stick with. He decided to change it up. He decided to throw shots back at the Hawaiian punch, body shots back at the Hawaiian punch, to slow down his punches. You know, Brian came out looking just strong, really strong. And his corner, too, was giving him great advice. He was giving him advice that was that could have helped him out and adjust him. But he had a kid that was just possessed and was not willing to go anywhere. Estrada was – it was his night. And, you know, Brian is all class. He put out there on Twitter right after that saying, you know, Mexico's got a new champion, and I'll be back. And that's the that, – you know what? That is the mentality that a fighter should always have, and that's the mentality that I certainly respect. And the Hawaiian Punch is all class in my book, man. You know, wish him all the luck for his next fight. Like to see those guys go at it again. But obviously, you know, if Estrada decides not to and decides to go back and try to get his rematch with Chicolatito, he certainly deserves it. But let's keep Brian in the mix. Let's not take him out of it, man, you know. Let's pass in some more fight fans here on Leaving the Ring. Let's go with area code 510. You're on live right now, Leaving the Ring.
Yo, what's up, guys? How's it going tonight, man?
Going good, brother. How you doing, man?
I'm doing good, thanks. I just wanted to touch on the Rios-Alvarado fight real quick. Years back, man, about when I was in my early 20s, I had a great honor to get trained by a former 154-pound world champ. And he taught me a lot about the technical aspects of boxing, which I appreciated very much. But as far as footwork and head movement and the ins and outs of the game. But his father would sit down with me and teach me more about the philosophy and how to think about going into the ring and stuff like that. And excuse me. What he told me is, I heard this afterwards from other people before, but he said, you need to learn how to play your song. Don't go in the ring and go right into the chorus. And that's
right.
What Rios does, in my opinion. And he needs to learn how to set things up a little more, be a little more patient, and set the table a little bit better. And I agree with what you guys said earlier. He may even get the knockout in the third fight, but I don't think his style's suited for longevity in the sport by any means. And if he could learn how to play a song a little bit better, I think he could stick around for a long time. He could be a great fighter, you know.
You know, his style is obviously it's a fan TV friendly style. You know, we love guys that are all balls and they're going to leave it in the ring. But I agree with you. You know, the fundamentals of boxing is it has to go back with head movement, how to pair, which he does pair quite well. You know, it's just really up and close. But footwork is, you know, when I go to the gyms and I talk to kids and I see them doing something with their footwork or a coach is not even bothering working with them, I'll go in there and I'll kind of show them that footwork can really eliminate space. You know, if you're trying to get your straight right hand down the pipe, but you're throwing it and the guy's able to take not even a full step, but a half step, there's something wrong, you know, and that's where footwork comes in, you know, is where to place your front foot and how to slide it forward, how to slide it to the left or to the, you know, or step it outside of the other guy's leading foot in order for you to land a certain punch. And I'm not saying that Brandon Rios doesn't know how to do all that, but what's worked for him, has worked for him, has got him to the point where he's at now. But this is where longevity kicks in, like you were saying. Now he's got to go back and think about, okay, guys have figured out my game, guys have figured out my style. Now I got to add little aspects here and there to make sure that I give him a surprise. It's not going to be an overnight type of surprise thing, but you put in little armory in his arsenal that if a guy decides to get mobile with him, well, footwork comes into play when you cut off the ring. See, it's just not about cutting off the ring, you know, and I'm pretty sure you know that, where when you hear a guy goes, he's got to cut off the ring, what they start doing, they start following the guy because they don't know any better. They don't know that you're supposed to step outside of the guy's leg, you know, and cut off that ring. You got to think a little bit more, and that thinking becomes second nature when you do it all the time. So
I agree with that. I think the other thing, too, the reason, at least in my opinion, why Alvarado, excuse me, was switching from southpaw, because what I was noticing is Rios has, he tends to have bad hand positioning with the left hand, and I think Alvarado thought not only could he confuse him, but maybe land a bigger shot with the power hand in front, maybe a right hook, or keep him off with a nice, good, stiff right jab. But I could tell that style is still real fresh to him. He hasn't really quite got down the southpaw.
Right.
If he would get into it, he would move around, and then I could tell he's feeling a little uncomfortable, and he would switch back to orthodox.
I thought he did it, too, because he was conscious of the from the first fight, the left hand landing and hurting him, you know?
Gotcha.
So obviously it was something they worked on, they studied, they looked at. And that's why I say an appreciation of a guy that comes in where, with Mike Alvarado, this is a guy that took a beating from Prescott, right? And we appreciate that. When he got in with Herrera, he was taking a lot of shots. So we knew that Mike Alvarado could take a lot of shots. We knew that he's a guy that's going to come forward and mix it up with you. But then the appreciation is that he understood that I can't win all my fights like that. So he came in with the Rios fight, not trying to bully his punches in. He became the matador. He allowed the bull to come forward, and when the bull stuck out the horns, he would ole him. And that's what I like about a fighter. That what tells me that this fighter understands the state of where he's at as a fighter and the state that he needs to go with in the game of boxing. Rios, well, it's too early to criticize him and say, well, he can't change. He can never change. Because, for one, he's still young. He's not old. Two is that we do get a sense that he is trying to up his game by hiring Memo Heredia, which wasn't the greatest name that we all wanted to hear that was in line with him. But it tells me that he's at least venturing out and trying new things so that he keeps longevity in his career.
I would agree with that, man. And just one last thing about the go ahead, Gabe. Sorry about that.
No, I like the discussion you guys are having. I think we're just going to call Justin in right on time, which is in about 8 minutes. I think I always call it like daring to be boring. You know, you don't have to be throwing punches all the time. You don't always have to be doing something that's offensive in order to be being tactical while you're in the ring. And I really respected the hell out of Alvarado for moving away and not giving into the crowd this time and fighting his fight. And that was really the difference. And I think Rios, you could just see it in his kind of crazy aggression afterwards. He just wants to come forward and just get crazy. And I know he's got more boxing skills. I've heard people in the gym that he works out of talk about him and say that, you know, he's got mad skills. He's got a heavy jab he saw in the fight. But he wants to give the crowd and his emotions what they want, as opposed to feeding into his brain and saying, you know what, I'm going to box a little bit. And maybe it won't be as exciting, but, you know, it's going to get me the win. And that's why Rios is Rios. And he's going to be a fighter, win or lose, that we'll watch until he's done.
I agree with that 100%. Just one quick thing before I let you guys go about the Mayweather and Guerrero fight. I think watching Floyd over the years, his really only weakness that I see in terms of defense is the straight left coming from either side. You know,
I thought you were going to say the ladies, you know, can't keep his hands off me.
Yeah, that's true. the straight left coming from either side, we see a lot of guys landing the jab against him. So I think Guerrero, if he could pick up the speed a little bit more with that straight left and throw it right down the pipe and be aggressive like what you guys were saying, I think it's the best opportunity right now with Floyd coming out of jail. His father is going to be in his corner. At least that's what they said on the All Access show. A lot of things changing. I think Guerrero has a good shot, man. I'm excited for the fight for Guerrero.
You know, me too, man. Watching that All Access, you know, I'm not really big on the 24/7 series or any of that kind of stuff. I rarely ever catch it. But, I'll sit back and I'll watch just like, let's say, the first episode and see what happens from there. But, you know, both of these guys, Floyd, you know, Floyd's always going to be Floyd. But what I was really interested in is that, and I've said this numerous times, and I've told this to Gabriel and anybody else, you know, I've known the Guerrero camp for quite some time. And I've said, you know, there's a lot of street to Robert. There's a lot of street in him, you know, but he's a guy that chose his path of life of, you know, serving God. But at the same time, he's a warrior. And he trains, he has the mentality of a warrior, which is, you know, don't pollute my body, stay focused, you know, does he surrounds himself with his family and his family or really well known in Gilroy and Hollister and, you know, all around the little towns around Gilroy. But that, don't let the sweet taste fool you. There's a lot of street to Guerrero, and we're starting to see it. We're starting to see that streetness out of him. Unfortunately, some of that streetness ended up put him behind bars for a few hours, a couple hours. But you're going to see more and more of the side of Robert the Ghost Guerrero. And the folks that thought that he's a little bit too nice, that's why his chances are slim of beating Floyd, I think that their mindset is going to change a little bit, because they're going to see – I think Gable put it perfect one time on the show, Gable. You had said, Robert the Ghost Guerrero is a Mexican redneck. Anyways, brother, thanks for calling, man. Appreciate the call.
Was that me that said that? Are you going to get me in trouble, Dave? I didn't say he was a Mexican redneck. I said he was from a small town. And
was it a redneck or a hick? Something like that. You said.
He's from Gilroy. It's a smaller town. Right. It's off the beaten path. It reminds me a little bit of Woodland, and I know a lot of dudes from Woodland, a lot of Mexican dudes from Woodland, and it's just different mentality. It's a little bit tougher, you know, I just think there's a chip on Robert's shoulder that, you know what, like he's not in San Jose, he's not in Sacramento even, or Oakland, San Francisco, any like the big places. He's from Gilroy in NorCal. Not a lot of run there. He's not even from Woodland. I think there is a bit of that chip on his shoulder. He wants to put his town on the map. He wants to put himself on the map. I mean, can you think of another multiple champion in multiple divisions that I wouldn't call it insecure, but that is craving respect more than Robert Guerrero? I can't. And I think that makes him dangerous.
It makes him really, really dangerous, you know. And here's the thing, too, that when you live in a big city, the temptations there are endless, okay? San Jose is a big city. San Francisco is a big city. Sacramento is a fairly good, sizable city. But he's from Gilroy. If you've ever been to Gilroy, man, it's not that big. You know, there's a lot of farmland all around. I've been to Gilroy plenty of times. I lived in Hollister for a minute. But there's not a lot to do. So a lot of people that come from these small towns, I know a lot of folks from Hollister, they're very grounded. And from people from Gilroy, they're very grounded people. And Robert is one of those grounded guys that chose to be a family man, a godly person, but at the same time a fighter. So he consumes himself of being a fighter. And when you have somebody that consumes himself in being a fighter, it just spells out that this kid's going to be a badass. And we have slowly but surely starting to see it, you know. There's just a few points of concern that I have for Robert. One is that straight right, like I mentioned a little earlier, but also the scar tissue. Robert has been known to cut, you know, and Floyd knows that. You know, that forearm that Floyd likes to throw out there could obviously cut the eye of Robert. And with blood gushing down and blinding his left side, well, that could really help out Floyd to start landing that right hand a little bit more. So there's a lot of scenarios that the Guerrero camp is obviously up against. There's more scenarios that they have to overcome and jump over the obstacle of getting a victory than Floyd Mayweather does. Floyd, all Floyd's got to be concerned about is that his old legs act like young legs. That the being put away for 30 days and for some reason he acts like he was put away for 10 years. Didn't take its toll. And the other thing, the only thing he's got to be concerned about is that he didn't overlook Robert the Ghost Guerrero. But Robert's got a lot of homework to do. We'll find out. We'll find out on May 4th, man, if Robert did his homework and he's going to be able to either give Floyd a great fight or give Floyd his very first loss.
Yeah, that's going to be interesting. It's going to be interesting. You know, I think that he certainly is going to give him his best fight, Robert's best fight. Let's see if he gives Floyd his best fight. You know, it's. I know the distraction of the trial is it's going to be great. You know, I don't see how it couldn't be, and it's crazy. It's almost like thinking back to Diego Corrales heading into his fight with Mayweather and looking at jail time on the other end. You can only imagine. I've never gone to jail. What looking at impending jail must feel like. You know, I don't know what that feels like.
It's like day camp.
What's that?
I said it's like day camp.
Yeah, but it's like, well, I don't know if the actual jail itself, but I'm talking about, like, you know that at the other end of this, you're going to begin a trial and knowing the precedent set with, like, celebrity athlete before shooting himself, you know, Plaxico Burress, and still having to go to jail because they just don't have a gun in New York. You know you're going to jail. What's that feel like? That's a crazy, I mean,
that's
a stress that I don't think people, like, really can get. I mean, don't you think that draws some energy as you're working out? No matter what you're fucking doing, pardon the F-bomb, but no matter what you're doing, you know, you're thinking about freaking jail, right?
You have to, you know, unfortunately, but being a professional, which is hard to do, is you got to push that piece of stress, concern out of your head, because for one, you're fighting one of the best fighters in the world of our times right now. This is the biggest event you're going to be involved with. So either you look at it and say, hey, this is my only chance, I'm going to grasp this and get a hold of it like a pit bull, or you drop the ball because you end up walking in there like Diego Corrales, who couldn't separate his process of thought, that of going to jail and fight time.
Well, I mean, let me ask you this. Like, say the fight's not going well. Is jail going to be something that comes to mind immediately? Like, this is how I'm going to enter jail, or damn it, now next comes jail. You know, how do you keep that thought out of your head in the middle of a fight? Like, I think it is a kind of a big deal. I mean, it's, you know, all the schematics, X's and O's of the thing aside, that's something that is huge. You know, so I think it's a major factor in the fight. It's going to be something to contemplate down the line.
No, it sucks, man. You know, I've been there. Trust me.
That's why. I mean, I don't mean to. You know, I was hypothetically asking, but no, you know,
I've been there, and I've. That's why, you know, when I see a guy talk about 30 days, dude, try 3 years. You know, my family have a long history of being incarcerated. You know, my father did 14 years straight. You know, uncles, they're still in there. I have an uncle that's a lifer. He's got three consecutive lives on him. I've got cousins that are lifers at Pelican, you know, Folsom, you name it. It's not something to take lightly. It's not something to glorify, but it is part of life. And, you know, I hope that Floyd learned his lesson, and wish him all the best, not just as an athlete, but as a person. And for Robert the Ghost Guerrero, he made an honest mistake, but you know what? Just because you're honest doesn't mean that you shouldn't pay the price. Josh McDaniel, we did the ring walk, which will be coming out next week. He made some excellent points, you know, because he was like, hey, look, do I feel sorry for him? No. You screwed up, and then you should pay for it like everybody else does in our society. Just because you're an athlete, we shouldn't put you on this pedestal. Just because you're a good person, you know, you should be punished like everybody else. You know, because if it was just any regular Joe, well, they would throw the key. They would, you know, you would have to follow up in serving that time. So, that being said, I personally do not wish jail on any of my enemies or any of my friends, because I'm a guy that strongly believes that jail sometimes doesn't solve the problem. It worsens it. It makes a person, like, look, I don't want to get into this whole prison mentality or whatever, but I've been a guy that I've went and spoke to kids that are in trouble. I've been out to, you know, I'm an advocate of that kind of thing, because I believe if there's a young man or a young lady out there that's coming from a broken home or, you know, off the streets, and you're putting them away in jail, you're only making them a better criminal. You're not helping them at all. Even with drug addicts, you're not helping them. You know, we need programs, better programs. But anyways, that's a
more education. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Like, you know, more care for people. Oh, we're ready for Justin Fortune. You have the number, right? I sent it to you.
I do. Wait a minute. Is that the 323?
See? Yes.
All right.
Boy, there's a lot of ire. You know, if you're like there's a guy, Dan Raphael Sucks, on there, you know, on Twitter. If you're an alias and you're denigrating somebody like that, I'm going to immediately block you. I'm not even going to, like, deal with you. You know, like, I know I'm maybe making these guys more famous than they should be by mentioning their names, but it's – I think people should be accountable. These people are cowards. They hide behind these little parody accounts. Absolute cowards. And, yeah, if you mess with me publicly, try to assault me, yeah, I'm calling the cops. And I hope you have priors so that you go away for even longer.
Calling in Justin Fortune. The answers.
Hopefully it's my guy's answer. Hopefully he's not asleep. Possibility.
You have reached this.
I'll try him on private and see what happens.
Fight fans, you want to call in, you certainly can. If you have the mobile app, you can just connect to it with us through your mobile app, 347-215-7598. Let's talk some boxing here on Leaving the Ring. We're the patching another fight fan really quick before we get in, Justin Fortune. Let's get a code 347. You're on live right now on Leaving the Ring. What's on your mind? Area code 347. No, okay, let's move down the line. Area code 843. You're on live right now, Leaving the Ring. What's on your mind? Area code 843. Nope. All right. Probably just listening. Area code 860. You're on live right now, Leaving the Ring. What's on your mind?
Hey, what's up, Dave? It's CT again.
CT, what's up, brother? Go ahead.
Hey, I had to hang up and get back on for 1 second. Well, get back on for the rest of the show. But I just want to ask you guys, because I'm a big Gamboa fan. I just seen on YouTube today that he might have a scheduled fight against Darlan Perez. I don't know
yeah,
if you guys said.
I saw that. Okay. I saw that.
Yeah, I hope that does get signed because I think it's a pretty good fight, even though I'm going to pick Gamboa to win. But
you know what's funny? Fight. When I saw that, I honestly immediately thought, that's actually a good matchup from Gamboa because Darlan Perez is not the most active guy out there, but he does have a good punch. He's got good, decent speed. There's a guy, I think it was like 2011, he came on the scene, and I was excited about him. But right after that, we didn't see a whole lot. I don't know if there was some management problems, some promotional problems, or they just couldn't get a TV date for him or an opponent. But he's a guy that's just kind of, he's sporadic here and there. He's not always not consistent. And Gamboa, who has not been consistent, hasn't been a fighter the whole time being, he's been jumping from here to there and there to here, waking his waves of what he needs to get done. He still has a lot of questioning of his ability because he doesn't look like he's grown at all. So this, to me, is a good matchup for him.
Yeah. Will it be at lightweight or is he going to stay at junior lightweight, or is he?
I don't know. I didn't see any of that. I didn't hear anything about that. I just saw that the fight was being, being made or talked about to get made.
Okay. If you can you give me the what do you call it? To the Android, the app.
Yeah.
It's
either going to be LIITR Boxing. Or it's going to be Leaving the Ring, the whole word, Leaving in the Ring.
All right, thank you.
Yeah, it should be one of those two and stuff. And it's the 2.0. You want to make sure that the old one should have been coming up. It should be the 2.0 Leaving the Ring.
Okay. All right, thanks a
lot. All right, brother. Thanks, man. Our next guest is going to be Julio Kid Diaz, which his brother is Joel Diaz, the head trainer of Timothy Bradley. And Julio's going to be calling in, and obviously we're going to ask him some real questions here about his upcoming fight with Amir Khan.
He's calling in right now?
No, he's not. He's calling in at 7:30.
Oh, okay.
Patrick,
yeah, I'm not sure. I think I'm going to have to fire my trainer. I'm not sure what happened. I think, he does actually get up like at 4 in the morning, so sometimes around 7 he can fall asleep. So I'm just texting him and hoping. I texted him like 6:30 and he didn't respond, so I kind of had a feeling something was up. But we'll get him next week. It's not like it's a breaking story. It's
right.
I want to hear his tale of how Jeremy Williams claimed the WBU heavyweight title of the world in Iowa.
Wow.
After 6 years of inactivity and, possibly without a license. It's an epic tale. But I'll let Justin tell it.
Well, let's break down this Rigondeaux and Nonito Dernier fight, man. Let me hear your breakdown of it and your take. And then we'll talk a little bit about Terrence Crawford, who fought Bredius Prescott, and Max Kellerman and his comparisons of UFC MMA with boxing, and that Crawford reminds him of Pernell Whitaker, which I thought it was a little odd that he uses any slick person, any slick boxer for some reason, reminds him of Pernell Whitaker. I didn't see any Pernell in Crawford. I mean, Crawford did his thing. He looked great. You know, he was using angles, and he was making Prescott miss, and he was making Prescott, you know, pay for missing him. But no Pernell Whitaker. I'm sorry. Sweet. I'm a huge Sweet Pea fan, so maybe that's what it is. It just strikes a chord in me where I go, what? Like, come on, dude. Seriously? And for you to go ahead.
Yeah, it's just, do you have to see Sweet Pea in everything? Like, you know, Zab Judah was Sweet Pea before, right? This might be the closest thing we've got to Sweet Pea. Why can't they be, like the listener said, learn how to sing your own song, you know, learn how to do your own thing. And why can't you just, it just shows such unoriginality in the person viewing the art to constantly label them as such and such. You know, let them be who they are. It's like Rigondeaux, you know. I think that's why it's so, he's gone through so many trainers. The guy's an artist, and he doesn't really need you to tell him how to fight. He kind of wants some good strategy and some advice, but he doesn't want you to change him. He's got it down. He's done 400 fights. Now he just needs pro experience. And it's a guy, Rigo was a guy we're talking about Crawford, but you know, I thought we were going to get to Donaire and Rigondeaux. It's kind of on my brain, but is another southpaw guy that's a very original fighter, and I think you have to let them kind of be who they are, let them develop. I think Crawford, in some ways, we were, I don't know, fully aware of him, but you know, I was impressed with the fight. I think he might be not quite suited to the weight, but other than that, I thought it was a nice building fight for him. It was a solid performance and something certainly to build on. But Sweet Pea Whitaker, I mean, come on, let's just relax. You know, let the guy have his own career. Let him figure out who he is. It's that kind of fight, you know?
Yeah. There was no Sweet Pea there. There was Crawford.
No.
Crawford was there. He was the one that was, you know, taking the punches and throwing the punches back, and he was the one that was getting the win. You know, I know that as a commentator, you want to make your analysis, and sometimes you want to make comparisons, but Not every Crawford, trying to think of the other guy that people were comparing, Pernell Whitaker, like, you know, like Zab Judah, and not every guy that Marino, they're not going to look like Pernell. I'm sorry. You know, they're just going to look like themselves. You know, Pernell, to me, he's in his own category. I don't think we'll ever get another Sweet Pea. And if we do, it's going to probably not be when we're around, you know. But he had a great performance. I thought he, you know, stayed steady with his game plan, and he, you know, frustrated Prescott. Prescott definitely looked like he was not even there in the fight after mid rounds. Just couldn't seem to figure out Crawford at all. And Crawford, as soon as he got into that zone, man, he was zoning in them shots, and he was making sure that whatever zone that Prescott was trying to get himself in just wasn't going to happen, you know. So he was definitely a hitter in his game plan against, you know, Prius Prescott. So I like to see what Crawford's going to bring to the table. I think he shook it up enough to make it interesting. And it goes back into saying that, you know, here's the reason why sometimes when you have two major promoters on a network, when they decide to go their separate ways from their network, or a network decides to say, hey, you know what, enough's enough, we start getting better fights. We're starting to see the better fights out there. You know, now the Crawford and Prescott fight, was it like this, like, wow, this was a great, great fight? It wasn't, but it was definitely entertaining enough to keep us there to talk about him and to ask to see him once again.
Yeah, without question. We got introduced to an action fighter, or somebody that we want to see again. And I think that's always kind of the important thing, you know.
I want to see a little bit more of Penalosa Jr. I don't know if you had a chance to watch him. He was on the other card.
Yeah, I agree with you. I was a little bit surprised. You know, the last time I saw him, I wasn't, you know, last couple times, I wasn't all into it. But this fight, yeah, it was definitely a step forward. Yeah, I definitely want to see him again.
Gets back up, and you just saw that. Did you see the change of his, like, you know, he's got a poker face, definitely. And he's definitely got the warrior mentality of his senior. He gets dropped, he gets up, and you saw it, man. The kid has a fighter's mentality. He was like, "I'm gonna get mine." You know, you're not. He literally blushed. It was like he got embarrassed when he got dropped. And I'm trying to remember the Chinese kid that he had faced. God, I have it right here too written down. I can't remember his. Anyways, I'll look it up right now. But that kid too was there to fight. They made a great. Styles make matches, and obviously, you know, Pedroso didn't look good the first, you know, last time out, but this time he did because he had a guy who wanted to trade with them. The Chinese kid came out. He wanted to make a statement. You know, he was there in front of all his family and friends as well. But Pedroso came back out on that next round, and he made that statement, which is, you know, hey, I got my dad's blood in me, buddy. You're not going to take me out. And if you remember his father, this guy was a technician of his own, but he had power. If we could remember what he did at Johnny Gonzalez, dropped him, stopped him, and Pedroso Sr. was one of those guys that just did a lot of that.
Yeah, no, I thought it was very impressive. You know, it was not somebody that, not something I expected. You know, I didn't know if he had that deep of a well, and you know, seeing him now, it's pretty clear that he does. So, yeah, good stuff. You know, definitely. Sorry, I communicating with somebody else trying to get Justin. I don't think that's going to happen. So that's fine. Why don't we pull in? Do you want to pull in another caller, or do you want to keep breaking down the fights? Get to the fight schedule of the weekend.
Let's pull in another caller, and then we'll get into our fight schedule. Let's go with area code 210. You're on live right now. Leaving the ring.
Hey guys, what's going on?
What's going on, brother? What's on your mind?
How you doing, man?
Oh, good, man. It sucks I caught the last part of the show. I don't know what y'all covered yet, but I was talking to you, Rios Alvarado. I was wondering, because Alvarado, he boxed well, but, you know, it looked unnatural. He reminds me of kind of Kermit Cinturon, where, you know, the former wrestlers. I'm not saying as far as skill level, but I'm saying as far as, you know, the way his body moving is kind of tight, upper body. And, like, you could tell it's kind of unnatural.
Right?
What's that?
It's not quite comfortable. It's like he wants to square up like a wrestler, but he has to remember to go sideways like a boxer, right?
He's got the back of a wrestler. They both do. You know what I mean? It's that V shape, you know, and their shoulders are really wide. But, yeah, I completely agree with you. It's funny that you said that because I remember sitting there and, you know, he was talking about him being a wrestler, and I go, dude, this guy, he's reminding me for some reason right now of Kermit Cinturon.
Yeah, I mean, he was, the way he was boxing,
without question.
It seemed unnatural. Like, he had to really think and try to, when it came to, like, moving his head, kind of moving his upper body, moving from side to side. But I don't want to say Rio's got exposed. When you got a guy that does that and it's kind of unnatural to him, and you can tell he's really thinking and trying hard to keep that kind of movement that's not natural to him going, I just wonder what would happen during a natural boxer that moves and slides and has head movement and everything naturally, you know. So
I think we did see that already, though, with Abril. You know, Abril kind of showed if you have movement, and that's where Alvarado. It wasn't Alvarado figuring, hey, you know what, we should try this. It was Alvarado's camp and his team's going, hey, let's go back to the guy that should have got the win over Rios the first time, and let's look at what he can do, and let's kind of semi-mimic what he did to get that, to be successful, but without the success of the hand risen. You know, here's the thing with Rios. Exposed, I think you're right into a sense, though, where I strongly believe that himself and his team didn't think Mike Alvarado could be that smart and try to change his game plan. They figured maybe two or three rounds he was going to box like he did the first time, you know, the first fight. But I figured they were thinking, as soon as this guy gets hit, it's that old cliche saying, you know, Mike Tyson said, you know, everybody's got a plan until you get punched in the face. They thought, well, Mike, as soon as we pop you, you're going to throw the you know, the boxing IQ out the door, and you're going to want to bang with us. And for a moment, it almost happened. And through that whole fight, each round, bro, I keep thinking, can Mike keep this up? Can he keep this up? Is he going to gas out? Is he going to fall into a trap because he's starting to feel like this is getting easy for me, you know? And they end up kind of overcommitting and staying in that pocket a little too long. And would Rios be able to catch him? It was one of those. It was one of those fights. I think that's what made this second match such a good fight. But I think you're right, and I think that's what we were saying. The third match, could Mike do it again without Rios not making his own adjustments? You know, this to me is this match between these guys. It's whatever adjustments these guys come in new in their arsenal is always going to be the victor out of it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean I hope they do it soon. I mean I just worry about these guys. I was there at the fight and. You know, I got the chance to speak with some of the parties, you know, I mean, actually, I have long talks with one of the coaches, and yeah, that's what they're concerned about. You know, the off duty when they're out of the gym behavior. You know, and both guys blow up. You know, everybody was ragging on Rios, but Alvarado also came in. He gained 19 pounds for the fight, so you know they're both kind of walking that line. You know, you saw Alvarado with the cuts on his face. You know, and I just hope these guys don't burn out and you know before it happens again.
I you know somebody kind of mentioned to me that Rios probably has like three or four fights left at the top level. We're at that level, and then you know maybe think about calling it a career, make some good money, and just get out. The kind of fighter he is at the level he's at. It doesn't sound like too bad of a plan. But that, you know, I'm glad you brought up the point about them, the weight that they put on in between fights. It was interesting, and I put this in my column about the fight, that it was only 2000 when Arturo Gatti and Joey Gamache fought. And when you listen to that HBO broadcast, remember there was some question whether or not Gatti even made weight, but it was he came in at a listed 144. And he came in fight night like 18 pounds heavier, something like that, 18, 19 pounds. And I remember Jim Lampley on the broadcast, and I put the link into the article. He called it an astonishing weight gain of 18 pounds. They fast forward 13 years, and tail of the tape again, Jim Lampley saying, well, these are the modern athletes, and both guys are coming in as middleweights tonight. One is 161, the other one's 118 after both weighed in at 140. And that was about all he said about it. And it took only 13 years for us to think that that's normal, which I think is kind of scary. And you see these guys with like needing the TRT or their low T. They've got endocrine problems. We're like Mickey Bay, who's sick all the time, he says, that he's been sick his whole career. It's so much so that he thinks it's a bad omen if he's healthy during camp. You kind of have to wonder what the long-term effects of the day before weigh-in and how we've perverted that system is, what those effects are to the endocrine systems and the bodies in general of these young fighters. And it may be shortening careers the way we're doing it now. It's definitely something to think about.
Yeah, they look horrible at the weigh-ins. I mean, they look like ghosts when they came in. And maybe that's why he's reaching out to Memo Heredia, Angel, whatever his name is, for maybe trying to try different things to try to make it a little longer, seeing that Marquez was longer. But that's all I got, guys. I know it's kind of taking long, but I appreciate the time.
No worries. No worries at all. It's the internet, man. We can talk as long as we want.
Okay, well, just real quick. I'm going to go into the Diaz fight. I'm a crazy – this is Rodrigo. I'm a crazy boxing head, man. I'm going to be watching the HBO fight on my phone. Hopefully it'll be a little offset while I'm watching the live fight. I think he has a good way to go. We always say how the 135 division is kind of slim, but I think he might, hopefully, if he comes back healthy, he can bring a little bit of spark back and have some more players in the division.
That's I'm sitting there talking with the mute on. No, I agree with you. You know, it's going to be interesting going forward. Seeing with that division, because everything's kind of shifting a little bit too. Guys are moving up. And Matisse's got his feet, you know, with this 150 or 41 catch weight. Unfortunately, we don't have Peterson on tonight to discuss it. But guys are kind of putting their feet in a couple different divisions. Now, Nito's probably, this is his last fight at 122. He's probably going up to 126 where Abner is. Everything's kind of shifting. I'm really curious. Boxing's had a pretty good year so far, I think. It's got some really strange patterns going on in it, but I think everything's kind of leading towards action fights right now, and certainly from 135 to 147 right now, as usual, it's on the upswing, which is kind of nice.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. It is. Rodrigo, thank you, brother, for calling in. Put you back on hold.
Yeah, always a good call, dude. Thanks.
All right, thank you. Take it easy, guy.
All right, brother.
Let's patch in one more fight fan before we get Diaz with us here on Leaving the Ring. Let's go with area code 447. You're on live right now on Leaving the Ring.
Yo, can you hear me?
I can hear you, brother. How you doing?
Yeah, how you doing, guys?
Go for it. What's
can
on
you
your
hear
mind?
Me?
Yes. Go ahead. How are you?
Yeah, just a question about Thomas Hauser, the boxing writer. Is he still working for HBO?
Yes, he is. He's working as an HBO advisor, yes.
Do you know what, did they have any influence on the decision to not work with Golden Boy?
No, I don't think so. I think that I think that was a long time coming. I mean, he may have weighed in on it. I haven't really talked to him about it. I imagine that's kind of one of the things that an advisor does is weigh in on important decisions. But as I understand it, it was more Hirschman's decision, and that even there were some that had kind of advised against going so public and marrying HBO to such like a hard line. We're not doing this, you know, like the old phrase, never say never. But I think he really felt he needed to kind of explain, rather than what kind of Golden Boy is doing over at Showtime, is just kind of quietly freezing everybody out while really publicly, you know, obviously putting everything under one roof. I think that he needed to kind of clear the air. At least that's what Hirschman felt like. And so I think that's why. But I don't know if Tom directly had any influence. I certainly don't think Tom makes policy at HBO. I think he's simply an advisor who would give his advice.
No worries. Thanks, guys. Great show.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Cheers.
Cheers.
Yeah, man. Thanks. You know, from the UK. So
that was a pretty specific question.
Yeah.
It is kind of interesting. I don't know how you feel about it. Regarding Tom Hauser and that advisory position. I mean, a lot of different hats get worn in this sport by the writers, and it seems these days. And it does kind of bring up questions of, I don't know if ethics is the right word, but you have to look back at, you know, Tom used to write those HBO exposés, and then they hired him, and he hasn't written one since. And maybe he's, like I've always said, he's kind of getting kicked up into management so that he can be kind of part of the solutions. And that's the way I've always treated it. Yeah, I mean, that's all I kind of have to say about Tom Hauser right now.
Fight fans, call in right now. 347-215-7598. Let's talk some boxing here. We're waiting for Julio Diaz, Kid Diaz. Call in and talk some boxing. We'll give. Let me get your official pick for the Rigondeaux and Dornier fight here, Gabriel. Tell me who you got, who you're picking, and how do you think it's going to play out, man?
I think it's going to be a bit of a chess match. I think it's going to have some heated exchanges. I was really surprised. You know, the Nito brought in Eric De Leon and Victor Pacias, two very talented amateur fighters, you know, multiple national championships. They're just the top shelf blue chip prospects and just built to last. You know, these guys, super strong, lightweights coming in. I think actually Pacias is a super feather or a featherweight. Big kid though, man. You look at him and you go, how do you make that weight? And so,
I mean, he's shorter definitely from Nonito, you know.
Well, and they're much more aggressive, but they're both like counter punchers, but like aggressive counter punchers, and they really kind of pushed towards towards Nonito and just went after him, you know. And Eric De Leon seemed to me to have better footwork, kind of feinting in and hopping out and feinting back in. He was kind of laying traps and tricks for Nonito and was getting good shots in. I mean, he looks like he has good power. So Nonito's, you know, used to a guy with some pop. And Pacias was also very physical, going after him, pushing him around, really putting the pressure. And both guys were throwing four or five punch combinations. They were really letting their hands go. It was spirited eight rounds. De Leon did six of them. Pacias did the last two. And they'd done 12 rounds altogether on that Tuesday. So that said, like, I don't think that's how Rico is going to fight at all. I don't think it's going to be that explosive. I think it'll be explosive in spots, but I think he'll be looking for that big shot and to be going after Nonito's body and looking to kind of counter him. He likes that left hook. I think that you'll see a lot of Donaire trying to lure Rigondeaux trying to lure Donaire to get going so that he can kind of bounce out back in and land with power. He's going to be countering all night. I think Rigo's will is going to be stronger and that he's going to be able to make Nonito take the chances and lead because he'll be able to pot shot with straighter shots from the outside and those long, low arms. He's lower to the ground. He's going to be able to get underneath Nonito a little bit. If he decides to choose to use the uppercut, Nonito, I think that's going to be very effective for him. But that said, I just got a bad feeling about this one for Nonito. I got Rigondeaux out of nowhere, straight left to the body or a kind of rear left shot to the body, and it puts down Donaire, and it's over. That's, you know, the body, though.
The thing with Rigondeaux is he's a guy that – he's a sharpshooter for one. But he's a guy that does that no-nonsense, I'm not going to waste punches. He looks for his target, he locks it, and then he fires. That's what Rigondeaux does. Where Nonito he's an M16A1. Sprays all over the place. Wherever the bullets land, they're going to land. And when you're fighting a guy like Rigondeaux, which you could drop him, you can hurt him. Absolutely. But the armor that Rigondeaux brings is that power. And that power is something I don't think that... I think Nonito's always been the stronger, bigger puncher than any guy he's ever stepped in the ring with. This is the first time around where he may get touched and go, whoa, this guy's got some pop. But not convinced yet. And I think that's where the convincing is going to fall apart and he gets knocked out by overcommitting, stepping in, allowing his hands to be like an M16A1. And the guy that's got more of a F-14 missile locks his target and fires and boom, lights out. I believe we got Julio Kid Diaz with us here on the line. Are you there, brother?
Yes, I'm here. How are you doing?
Doing good, man. How you doing?
Good, man. Just thank you for having me. I'm just excited. The day is getting closer and closer.
It's definitely getting closer. Are you leaving? Let me ask you this first. Are you leaving soon over there to England to get comfortable with the time zone?
You know what? I would have preferred leaving prior to the day, but they gave me a week, so I leave the 20th. But I'll arrive there Monday, so it's basically about 5 days. But you know how it goes. I gotta do the best I can with what they give me.
Why a week? Why? Let me ask you that. Why a week? I mean, is that not a decision up to you guys in your camp? Is that a decision up to the promoter or the network?
You know, we requested 2 weeks, but promoters, you know, they go back and forth, and they were able to give us a week. So, you know, I mean, we kind of knew that was going to come. You know, right now, you know, of course, all the favors for Amir and, you know, everything they could do to make everything uncomfortable for me. That's how it works. You know, it's supposed to be done, but... You know, we're going to try to play the game and, you know, try to beat the odds. You know, that's the idea. That's the drive I thought right now to work even harder. Just trying to beat those odds.
Well, let me ask you this, you know, and of course, you know, I respect every guy that gets in the ring. You guys do a job that most of us would never dream about doing. You know, I've always told people that you got to be a little crazy to want to get in the ring and get punched in the face and enjoy it when you make it into your living, right?
Yeah.
But then it's got to come into the play of realistically, you know, and a lot of fighters, they don't want to let go of that. They don't want to let go of the fact that they may not have it left anymore. But they want to stake with that. There's one more fight left in me. There's one more fight that's going to make the greatness stay there where I can, you know, walk out to the sunset. Fight fans right now, they're brutal. You know that. And they're like, this guy, you know, Diaz is going to get knocked out. It's not a no-brainer. There's no multiplying division. There's no adding, subtraction, because it's all going to equal out with Diaz getting dropped and stopped by Amir Khan.
Sure.
I'd like to hear your case about what you think about that and how much of that has got into the mindset of yourself, and has it affected you, or is that just a pure motivation of what you need to do in England?
Look, honestly, it's no motivation either way. It don't bother me. I've been in this game forever. I've been the underdog all the time. I mean, it's no big deal to me. You know, the fight fans are going to do what they got to do. And, you know, people tend to go by a paper or by the critics. You know, Amir Khan, if you look into it, Amir Khan, he's been knocked out twice. He's just lost twice in a row. He only has one comeback fight against, you know, a decent fighter, but not in his weight class. A small Carlos Molina with no power. That was a safe fight for him to get back, you know, and look good. Okay. Now, I mean, yes, I've had my ups and downs, and I know why. And that's why I gave it one last run, because I knew I just had to commit myself and be 100% and dedicate myself. And no problem. I know I can't be beat. You know, and I came back. This is my third fight as my comeback. And so I think I have proven that I still have some more than Amir Khan. Amir Khan just has one fight as a return fight. Okay, now, I just come from beating Sean Porter, and I took that fight because not as a stepping stone. I know they gave it to me as a stepping stone, but I wanted to use Sean Porter as well, you know, to prove that I still got it, to prove to the fans that I still deserve another shot, because I just come from beating an undefeated prospect who is very young, top of his game. Okay, so what better, you know, to prove myself? That's why I am where I am right now. You know, supposedly a year ago, I was retired, I was washed up, Diaz is old, and look where I'm at now. You see, I just stand back and hear and listen to everybody. It doesn't bother me. I'm proud of myself, and I'm excited. And as long as I know what I'm going to do over there, I'm going over there to win. I'm not going over there for an opportunity. I'm more than ready, and I'm confident. See, Amir Khan cannot take a punch, you know, and I'm a hard puncher, you know, and I come to fight. And I mean, I'm not going for a paycheck. I'm going to fight. I'm going to beat the odds. You know, this is my chance to redeem my career. You know, this is my lottery ticket. This is all for me right here. You know, so this is my big opportunity. This is the only reason I gave it one last shot in my career. You know, maybe my last three fights that I have won was for this purpose, to open the doors to get here. Now, Amir Khan's the one that has my ticket, so I can enter in the big.
Let me ask you this. How do you deal with, obviously, Amir Khan's speed? And the kid does carry some pop, you know, of his own. How do you deal with those two things? And then being added is Andre Ward's trainer to his corner. You have three things now that you're up against. How does yourself, and you're an accomplished fighter, you've been around the game for quite some time, and I've said this to your brother and to numerous people. I believe that your brother's one of the best boxing trainers out there today.
Yeah, look. Sure enough, I mean, Virgil Hunter is a good trainer and so, but, you know, but then again, yeah, I think he's only been one camp with Amir Khan. No fighter, I tell you from my experience, I've been fighting all my life. You cannot adjust a fighter and trainer. They cannot adjust overnight or over one or two fights. You know, that takes a lot of time. Amir Khan has had this style, these weaknesses, these mistakes he makes. He's been bringing them on since he was amateur. I mean, Virgil Hunter ain't going to change him really quick overnight. I mean, look at now Virgil Hunter started helping Pedro Angulo. Pedro Angulo looked the worst he's ever looked in his last fight with Virgil Hunter. You know, Virgil Hunter's a good trainer, but he's just not going to change this guy or anybody overnight. I mean, and then, yes, I know he has a tremendous speed, and he has his pluses and his minuses. That's why we have a good training camp, but we're trying to neutralize that. But I'll just tell you one thing. If Amir Khan don't hurt me or I don't get his respect in the beginning rounds or he doesn't get my attention with his power, the fight's over, I guarantee you. Because I'm not going for a decision. I actually trained just for a knockout. I don't care about winning rounds. I'm not going to worry about stealing the show. It's his fans. He sold his ticket. It's his hometown. I don't care. All I need is my W. That's what I'm going for. Whether I get it in the 10th, 11th round, I don't care if I was losing the whole fight. I win. I'm going for a knockout. That's the only thing that's going to keep me alive up there.
So let me ask you then, that's going to be less boxing, more what, sitting back and kind of catching them with the way Danny Garcia did, or going forward and hoping you could take his best shot so that you can land one of your big ones?
I thought a little bit of that, a little bit of everything. But I don't know until I get there, until I fill them up. You know, my idea is, you know, start punishing them from the beginning, you know, and trying to force them into not making the distance, you know, start breaking them down early. Or then again, just sharpshoot them. Just try to make every punch count. Be sneaky and just, you know, hurt them little by little. I mean, I don't know. I'll make the adjustments when the bell rings. You know, and the good thing that I'm very skillful in the ring with when it comes to, I could be a boxer, I could be a brawler. I'm a southpaw, I'm a right-handed. You know, I'm not a Carlos Molina who just going to be in front of him straightforward, your old typical Mexican fighter just trying to break him down with his forehead. No, I'm going to give him angle, speed. I'm going to use my experience. I'm a veteran. You know, I'm going to smother him. I'm going to do everything I can. I'm going to fight with the heart, and I got the will to win.
Let me ask you this, Julio. This is Gabriel Montoya. Welcome to the show, man. You're just such a – I love listening to you talk. You're an eloquent fighter, man. You know exactly what you're trying to do, and you really express yourself well. I appreciate you coming on.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome, and you're honest with us too. And let me ask you this, because I followed your whole career. My family's from the Coachella Valley, and so I always have a special connection. I think all desert people do. When you find out that another dude's from the desert, you get excited, you know. And I've just followed you, and now you've had stoppage losses in your career, and you know, as you grow, even before you've ever lost, you probably have assessed yourself as a fighter. Okay, I'm good on the right and the left. I'm fast. I'm better at using angles and my speed. But when you find out that you can be stopped, what does that do to your game? Is that just another thing that you know about yourself and that you have to be cognizant of? Or do you have to forget that it happened and fight each fight as if it's never happened before?
No, you know what? I think the best thing that you could do when something like that is learn from it. Okay, you got to sit back and ask yourself why. You know, if you just don't know why, then that's the problem. That will worry me. But the thing is, I'm not making excuses, because I never make excuses to the world. You never see me say, oh, I lost a fight because I didn't train. Or, no, I know personally what I've done. Every fighter will know. All the time, every fighter will know what they did wrong. You know, if you don't know what happened, then there's a problem with you. And I know, I was like, okay, Julio, you're in discipline. You're trying to lose your 15 pounds the week of the fight. You came weak. You paid the price. Okay, you're trying to fight at a weight class that's not yours. And forcing your body, losing 35 pounds per fight, boom, you paid the price. So I was like, okay, you know what? From now on, I'm going to be healthy. I'm going to be a fighter 24/7 and dedicate myself, see what I can do. I captured 2 world titles with 50% distance. So I go, you know what? Let me see what I can do if I dedicate myself 100%. And thank God right now, things are looking bright. I mean, I'm back on my feet. I'm back here with you guys. I get some attention now. People's calling me champ again. People shaking my hand again. I mean, that feels good. That motivates me more. I'm walking around on weight. I look healthy all the time. You know, my life just changed. So I'm enjoying this. But regardless, I'm already a winner. I already saw the difference in my life all the way around by me making that change.
Has there been a discussion, Julio, between yourself and your team? If there's a strong possibility you get dropped, that there can be an immediate stoppage because it is in his home front?
Yeah, I mean, you know what? Actually, we haven't really spoke with detail, you know, much about that. For me, that don't worry me. I mean, none of that stuff bothers me. I don't even think about that, because now the game of boxing, the sport of boxing, has changed so much. So when I started, before, you either win or you lose, and that's it. There's no ifs or buts. Now, your performance, it was matters. Now, the people's in the sea. I don't care if I lose in England, but the world on TV and everybody saw Julio win the fight. That's what Julio won the fight. My next fight is going to be a bigger fight. You see, I mean, now you see these guys, Alvarado getting knocked out. Oh, he has a rematch for twice as much the amount of paydays and even bigger fight. You see these guys getting knocked out, but it was a good fight. They people enjoy it. Now they become bigger champions. You know, now these days, it's about performances. And I want to go beat Amir Khan. And as long as you guys see that Julio won, Julio looked good, that's all that matters. For example, really quick, look at my last performance against Sean Porter. Okay, yeah, they gave me a draw. See,
right.
Now look where I'm at. Look where I'm at. I got a draw, but look where I'm at. Because the people saw who really won, and promoters saw my performance, and that's why I'm a credible opponent, because I'm here. See, so that draw didn't really bother me.
How do you deal with the speed? How did you who did you use in order to prepare? Because you know it's going to probably take – I was there for the Molina fight, and I've seen Amir in the gym. He's got some of the fastest hands I've ever seen. And he's a big guy for 140, although I wouldn't say he's like a durable guy, because the way he takes a shot, he gets a little shaky, and he doesn't – it's not like a Rios where he kind of recoils and then he's like good and he kind of keeps coming forward. When he's hurt, he's hurt. But is that – do you think the biggest concern is his length and his speed?
Yes, you know what? I think that's going to be the biggest concern. But you know what? With experience, like a person with me, it's all timing. You know,
sure.
With speed, you can control it with timing. You know, and I've been sparring for 2 months here, and, And I get nothing but fast guys, the fastest we can, amateur guys, prospects, fresh, young talent who's really fast. And yes, I'm supposed to be the slow. I mean, I'm not a slow boxer, but I'm supposed to be the slow one. And after a round or two, we even out. It's just the experience. You get them to your level where you need to be, you know. And
yeah.
It's about timing, right? Picking at the right spots and bringing them down to your level at the right time. Sometimes you got to smother. You got to shove in to get them tight. You got to make them miss to make them get tight, make them slow. You know, it's all experience. I've seen it all. I fought. Sean Porter was a fast fighter, very slick fighter, you know. And, I mean, look what happened. It's because you got to know how to neutralize. See, two fights ago, I fought the guy just died, Hector Sanchez. He was a 6'1", 6'2", huge guy. And we trained for two rounds. We're going to break him and bring him down to my size, 5'9". And look at the fight. That's exactly what we did. We broke him down, and he bowed down to my size. Now he was my size, now it's time to work. You break him down from the bottom. Now the speed, there's ways to take away the speed.
Would you consider it safer to be on the inside than right on the edge of his power? Kind of, I mean, that's when we're playing it dangerous if you're out there, right?
Yeah, of course. I think anybody, no matter who it is, if you catch that punch at the end of the pipe, that's when you catch it with more force. You got to catch it in between, you know, kind of smother the punch. So yeah, I'm gonna make it a little rough in there for him. You know, I can't give him that space so he could shine. And I know he's going to make a lot of mistakes because he has that pressure. His comeback in England, all his people there, he wants to give them a good performance. He has a pressure of performing and giving the crowd a good fight, not me. I'm just looking for the win and catch him while he's trying to do that.
I'm excited about this fight, Dave. Julio, you've got me. You've got my interest piqued because I've watched you for a long time. And, I find it interesting is that Molina was more of a wide puncher, and he's a shorter guy coming up in weight. With you, though, you're always been big for your weight class anyways. You're 5'9", you're comparable size, and you're more of a straight puncher. I've always thought of you that way, and you do have pop. You do have knockout pop. What do you think would fit with Khan better? Why would they pick you other than you've been stopped before?
I think they picked you for the sole reason because you've been stopped, you know, and you were stopped by, you know, Holt, you know, on that ESPN card, Porter. I thought it was a great measure of what you've done, you know what I mean? But I think that's what they you know, Golden Boy was banking on. They were like, we need a guy that we think that Amir is going to be stronger. He's going to be able to land a big shot so that it can move him forward and trying to get that Garcia fight, you know, and sometimes Golden Boy has been notorious we're critical of their matchmaking, but this is a good fight. This is a good fight for the both of you guys. But sometimes Golden Boy they don't think out their whole strategy sometimes. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, you know what's interesting, and I mean, now that you mentioned, I mean, they did not pick me. I was their last resort, you know. They had a deadline to get an opponent. I was over here calling everybody out. Hey, I'm over here trying to get their attention, and nobody wanted anything to do with me. The first opponent came, fell through. The second one, they begged him for a long time. He fell through. The third one, at the end, they went to Josecito. Josecito wasn't going to go down in that way. I was like, okay, I'm a 147-pounder now. Okay, can you give 143? Okay, I'll take it. I mean, if that's what I got to do, I know I got to meet all the demands. You know? Whatever. I mean, whatever you guys want, I'll do. You know, I'm going to put in my work.
You're fighting 143.
Yeah, I'm fighting at 143. My last three fights were at 147. And by bringing me down to 143, and I said it to my team over a year ago. If I come back, I'm going to fight at 147. There's no way I'm ever going to drop more weight because that's the reason. People think I don't have a chin, but it just I've always been weak. You know, I fought with Luis Castillo, one of the hardest hitters, toe-to-toe. At the end of the fight, I took a knee because I couldn't see. He never dropped me. If you look at the fight, I took a knee. I couldn't see anymore. And my corner didn't stop the fight at that time. And I got frustrated because I tried to tell him, man, I'm in the corner. And I go, you know what, I'll just do it myself. And I paid it off and I took a knee. Right when they counted, I just stood up and I was fine. But But I think I could take a punch. You know, every fighter who don't knock me out, I beat him.
Well, you know, you've always been an action fighter, and I think that's another reason Golden Boy picked you, because, you know, say what you want about that company. They are about action fights and putting good matches together. And I think you and Khan, it's going to be like a high-level sword match, you know, because it's two guys that shoot straight punches. It's more like fencing with power than like two brawlers. But I think your mentalities are going to be – Amir's very aggressive. He's kind of learning how to slow down. And I think that's the big thing that Virgil Hunter keeps talking about with him is to slow
him
down.
He's hyper in the ring.
He's
very hyper.
Really hyper. He's totally tense.
And that's why he tends to catch a lot of punches that you don't see, because he's so focused on his offensive move. He's just trying to strike you, and he forgets. You know, be careful, guard yourself. He's just so into just trying to catch you and shuffle his hands. And
What I've never liked about Amir Khan is that he has a tendency, even though he's got really fast hands, his feet are not that quick. He doesn't get out of the way after he throws his punches. And that's what Danny and a few other guys were successful with him, of landing their punch. You know, I think that if you're going in and you say, okay, I'm going to let this guy feel that he's faster. I'm going to let this guy feel like he's stronger, because I already know that after he throws his flurry, he's going to stay there. You know what I mean? He never gives you angles. He doesn't know how to roll a shoulder. He has no head movement. He throws punches, and then he's so upright. His chin is like dangling. It pretty much dares you to throw a punch at him.
That's what I mean by timing. That's what I'm trying to tell you. I'm not trying to give up too much, but that's what I'm trying to tell you about timing. You got to time him, and it's no problem. Honestly, to me, I don't see this fight. I mean, obviously, I could be very wrong. Everybody might think I'm crazy. But me, my point of view, see, like my last fight, when they offered me two different opponents, I told my team, I want this guy, Porter. How is he getting defeated? He might be tougher. I go, I want this guy. It's an easy fight. And what do you mean? Is it a dog? Trust me. In the eyes of a fighter, you see something, and you just see that thing. And there's something that I see that the whole world is not seeing. But I see it, and that's part of my mentality. You know, that's the way I'm walking in. For me, I'm very confident, and I don't mind that people don't care or they don't think I might win or they don't give me a chance. I'm telling you, I'm going there to fight, and I'm giving a hell of a fight, and Amir is in big trouble in there. And don't doubt me or don't count me out, because I'm telling you, I'm healthy right now. I'm more than ready. I'm strong. I mean, I captured two world titles when back in the day. I didn't even know what a conditioning trainer was, or vitamins, or any of this modern stuff. Now I have a nutritionist. I have a conditioning trainer. Not to lose my weight, I gotta eat. I mean, that's a blessing. Boxing just became easy for me. I mean, it's been unheard of in my days. You know, to lose weight, you gotta eat and drink water. Wow, I mean, that's a gift. Training camps are easy now. You know, no plastic suits. You know, no plastic suits, even to spar. Wow. I'm actually sparring with a muscle shirt. That's like a blessing, you know? Now boxing is easy, it's enjoyable. See, I did all that old school stuff, and I got as far as I could with what we had in this little Coachella Valley and the small team that we had. We didn't have the finances or the big team or the big entourages or all these modern things coming up. Now I have a little bit more of that. You know, I have somebody, they feed me good food, and I feel good. And now I get a lot of fluid in my body. I train the way it's supposed to. Now I swim, I bike, I do CrossFit training. I got a lot of strength, you know, so I'm very confident now. I feel that if I'm going through the training and I'm completing the training that I'm going through, I shouldn't have a trouble with the fight. I'm telling you, I go through hell in the training. And I know it will pay off.
Do you think that's a huge problem in the sport? We were talking about it earlier about how, remember when Joey Gamache and Gotti fought and everybody went crazy about how much weight Gotti gained, like 18 pounds? That was like 2000. Now it's like 2013, and dudes are just doing that regularly. Like Alvarado and Rios gained, like, I think it was like 21 pounds and 18 pounds, respectively. Do you think that that's a problem we need to look at?
Yes, I think it is. You know, I mean, honestly, you should do the same thing. After my weigh-ins, I always felt, oh, okay, now we make weight. Now it's just a race. See who bulks up more. Whoever gains more weight has an advantage. See, now it's the opposite. You know, before I used to just stuff myself with every junk you could imagine to wake up in the morning heavy. And now you felt sluggish, slow, you couldn't breathe, you couldn't move. It was nasty. Now that I think about it, it's nasty. You know, now they gave me this in the contract, I cannot exceed 153 pounds, you know, the next day, or I get fined.
Yeah.
I mean, that's no problem. With Sean Porter, I weighed in at 146. I walked in at 151 or 152, you know, and I ate a lot, but now I'm eating clean. You know, now I was light,
nice.
I was faster, I felt, you know, healthy.
You finally have fuel in you, probably, too.
Yeah.
You know, the right fuel.
The right fuel.
Remember, there was that story somebody told me, I don't know if it was Dave or somebody told me, about Frankie Gomez when he went to Big Bear, and they gave him a food allotment, you know, for when he was up there. And he went and came back with, like, every
food
hot
allowance.
Pocket.
That was Steve Kim, I believe.
Yeah, he had a food allowance, and he came back with a ton of Hot Pockets. You know, that was what he was going to live on in training camp, you know, the kids today. But, Julio,
yeah.
Man, we're up against it. But, wow, what an interview. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. I got you started on the subject. What do you think we should do? I mean, should there be some sort of program for boxers?
No, you know what? I mean, honestly, I don't think it's nothing bad for, like, the boxing sport. They're not doing nothing illegal. I think the fighters, they're going to pay their own price. They're going to learn. You know, I mean, they think, because I was one of them. You think by gaining a lot of weight and by stuffing yourself with all these bad food, you think you have an advantage, and later on you realize that actually you don't. You know, it's not. You know, now at the position where I'm at now, I reflect on the things I used to do, and I'm like, wow, that's crazy. You know, I can't believe, you know? And I was performing like that. And, you know, but you live and learn. You know, I ain't perfect. Nobody's perfect. Everybody in the world, even the best fighters, are going to do things in their past, and now they're doing different. They're like, man, I can't believe I used to do that. Well, I'm one of them, and that's one of the things I used to do. But after the weigh-ins, I would just stuff myself with all these Pedialyte, and it would come out through my eyes like tears. I was like, man, I was so bloated. It was funny.
Wow. Yeah, it's, I mean, I think these, today, it's, we're starting to, you know, it's staying away from all the, like, the performance enhancing stuff, but just, like, the natural supplements. I think we just know more now. Like, Tim Bradley, that dude's just all about his body and, like, the, you know, upping his testosterone using pomegranate juice and Brazilian nuts or something. You know, he's eating kale. And
That's what I do. See, because Amir Khan, he made the USADA anti-doping. You know, they come to my house just randomly. I'm like, yeah, no problem. Come on in. You know, I have no worries. All my life, I mean, even if we wanted to, we never heard of that doping stuff or enhancements. Right here where we're at in Coachella, I mean, that's unheard of. You know, we didn't even know what that was. They told me, what kind of vitamin? We need a list of what you do. Oh, just a little multivitamin type of vitamin C and, you know, just whatever you drink from GNC, you know, just... Oh, that, what
yeah.
else? That's it. You know, I live at my ranch here, and I get my protein from my eggs, from my chickens right here. You know, I get my meat from my ranch here, and everything's organic and clean. I get my foods here from my ranch, you know, and I've always been like that, where, you know, that's our style, you know. I get all my fiber from my food.
Do you get your date shakes from Hadley's, though? Do you still go over there?
Yeah, Hadley's, definitely. You know, in fact, I just had dates a little while ago. No, but you know what I mean? I've never been a big vitamin person. I'll just get all my good stuff here, throw them in a blender, and that's my smoothie. I don't do powders. I've never done those. Like, at the gym, I see guys get, like, a protein powder and put it in, shake it. And I'm old school. I don't believe in that stuff. I just don't. Whether it's legal or not, I just don't like those powder. In my mind, I'm always iffy about it. If it's in a powder, it's fake, you know. But
yeah.
I'd rather come home to a nice piece of fish or a big steak. That's my protein.
Awesome.
Well, there you go. Well, Julio, we're going to wish you all the luck. Obviously, your brother, you know, he's very confident. He had said on Leaving the Ring, hey, I'll put 5 to 10,000 that my brother's going to come back as the victor. So, hey, we're going to root for you, man. We're going to root for you. Bring you back home.
All right, thank you, man. I appreciate it. Yeah, man. And we're really ready and excited. I mean, I'm telling you, I'm going to fight for everybody and for all those believers that believe in me and all those that don't, for my family, and this is the fight of my life. You know, this is my chance to get back at it, you know? I have a family of five. I got four kids. I got a lot of mouths to feed. So
right.
I got to fight hard.
There you go. Julio Kid Diaz here on Leaving the Ring, telling everybody, yo, don't count him out. Don't count him out yet. He's coming home back with that victory. All right, brother. Thanks again.
Thank you so much.
Appreciate the call.
All right, thank you, man. You guys have a nice one.
All right, brother.
Good luck to you, man. Thank you.
Well, that's all the time we have here left on Leaving the Ring. If you missed our broadcast, don't worry about it. You can catch it on the archives. You can catch it in the archives on the Leaving the Ring 2.0 mobile app. So, guys, have a great weekend. Don't drink and drive because you might spill your beer. And enjoy everything that happens. I'm Dave Duenas with my partner, Mr. Gabriel Montoya.
I'm going to turn into the masked cloud the way these guys want to kill me. Dave, as always, man, good show. Never been happier. Peace to you and to yours. And I got Rego late, but anything could happen.
I got Rego mid-round stoppage. I think he's not so neato. But anyways, all right, guys, you have a good one. If you want to email us here on Leaving the Ring, you certainly can at gmail.com. And then you can get that directly from your mobile.